listening to Nowhere in Mulberry, film, television, pop culture. It's where you find it. Hey everyone! Welcome to another Nim Mini Movie. I am the Jaystrom of Nowhere in Mulberry, soon to be Entertainment Landfill. We also have here Mulberry Bill. How you doing, Bill?
Excellent.
Welcome to the show. A very special Nowhere in Mulberry. It is another Nim Mini Movie, and this time we're here in 1985, Bill. How old were you in 1985, Bill?
This many.
Six?
Oh, you can't see. Six.
Let's see. I always have difficulty with this. I was, how old was I? I was 13 or 14.
You're old enough to know better, goddammit!
I was 13 or 14, basically. So, I'm going to say...
You would have looked at me and went, get out of my way, kid.
This I have to remember. I'm going to say I was 14 years old. What's weird about Back to the Future is it came out in summertime, right? It was like 4th of July movie, I believe.
I have no idea. I really don't. I don't even remember when it came out.
Let's see. It says July 3rd, 1985. For some reason, I remember seeing this like it was during the school year, but my memory is so foggy that...
Maybe it was so popular that it lasted through in, you know, like September.
It's hard to say. I mean, it could have been in the summertime. I remember seeing it with my dad only. You know, sometimes it was like my dad and my two sisters and we all went. But sometimes it was just me and my dad. And it was like, oh, this is special. Just me and my dad are going to see it. And it was neat then because, you know, my dad is old and he was alive in the 50s. And so there were points in the
movie. Wait, he was in his 50s? Or did you say he was born in the 50s?
He was alive in the 50s. So
oh, okay.
There are parts in the movie that I remember him chuckling at that, like, with a fond nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of neat. And me looking over like, what is he laughing at? I don't get it. It's be quiet yeah. over there.
I've never been able to enjoy the Back to the Future movies with my dad. My dad was born in 49, but he just doesn't care for them at all.
Really?
Like, if I'll be watching them, he'll be like, oh, Back to the Future, huh?
Well, that's one thing I want to... Back to the Future, when it came out, I remember seeing the poster and the commercials, and I knew it was Alex P. Keaton, because... Mm-hmm. Hell, I watched the hell out of Family Ties.
Absolutely. Who didn't?
So, hey, I was a fan of Michael J. Fox, but I didn't know what the hell this movie was. I honestly didn't. It had the cool car. He had a skateboard. Oh, what the hell? I'm going to go see this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it had Spielberg's name all over it. Steven Spielberg presents Back to the Future. Okay.
According to the poster, it looked like he directed it. Like, his name was above everyone else's names.
And I remember even thinking that he left... This is how stupid I am, even at 14, that he left flame marks with his shoes, like he was running real fast or something.
Awesome.
Like, I don't, on the poster, like, you see the car and him standing there, but I was like, oh, he's like, runs real fast, and he creates flames or something.
He's super powered.
So when the movie happens, it's like, oh, okay, never mind. I'm glad you didn't tell anyone that, Jason, because I was wrong. You know,
as a kid, I was known to make shit up. Like, I saw something that I didn't, I would just make things up. Like, yeah, that was totally cool, that part, whenever he, like, flew across the sky.
Yeah, and you're like, what? Yeah, I remember things wrong a lot. Steven and I talk about this on the Jaws show, that I remembered something that scared the shit out of me from the movie that is not in the movie.
Maybe it should be in the movie.
It's like my imagination put it in there or something that I made it worse. So Back to the Future. I love this movie. I've seen it many times. It passes the Jaystrom test of we'll watch it anytime it's on with any part of the movie. I'll just sit down and keep watching it. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, same here. But you know what's funny is as I'm watching it, I always question it. Like how Back to the Future 2 goes back to the 1955?
Yes.
I always question it. Like, well, why can't I see Marty from the second part?
Yeah.
Like, I always have, like, I enjoy it. I love it. But I still question things about it.
I would love to get into some Back to the Future 2 talk because I've always had problems with Back to the Future 2.
Oh, God, yeah. But see, now, Now, Back to the Future 2 is the film that I have the biggest connection to.
Right.
Because that's the one I got to see in the theater. That
okay.
I had the love for the original because of VHS. That's when I first saw it, was on VHS. So I remember me and my dad going to Curtis Mathis.
Oof.
picking it out and going home and watching it and just being like, this is awesome! And then being able to go see the second, at the end of the first one, being just like, oh my gosh, there's going to be another one?
Yeah,
that was exciting. Another one to be continued? Oh my god!
Yeah, that is the difference between the first one and the second one, you know, it's 14. Then the second one came out, and I had a retail job.
Mm.
And I'll never forget, Back to the Future 2 came out the day before Thanksgiving, I believe. Or was it the day after Thanksgiving? I can't remember. Black Friday, you know, it was after Thanksgiving.
I knew we were on break. We
right.
were on break because we got to go to the theater to see it.
Okay, I remember I had to work that Wednesday. It was like one of those mandatory days. Mandatory mm-hmm. Wednesday, then Thanksgiving, then Black Friday, mandatory. I remember I was like, Back to the Future 2's out, and I'm not going to have a day off forever. What the hell? This is bullshit. So I was like, I'm calling in. And I remember I rode the bus. I didn't have a car or anything. I rode the bus to work, and we passed by the Town Center Mall on the way to my work. And mm-hmm. I remember just like, I didn't do this, Bill, but some force made me get off the bus at the mall, and it drove away, and I turned, and I looked, and I go, well, I guess I'm not going to work today. And I remember walking towards the theater and stopping by a payphone, and my heart was beating real fast.
Yeah.
I called, asked for the manager, you're on hold forever. Finally, hello, this is so-and-so. This is Terry, the manager, and I go, yeah, this is Jason. I'm not feeling well. I'm not going to be able to come in today. And there was this long pause and said, you're going to bring a doctor's note? And I go, yep. All right. Hope you get better. And I go, hang up. And I'm like, doctor's note? I'm screwed. Oh, well, I'm going to see Back to the Future 2. And I remember disappearing into the movie for 2 hours, coming out, and then like, oh, shit. Like, the movie's over, and that high is gone, and now I have to face reality that... And I remember, you know what I did on Black Friday when I showed up to work? Just didn't bring it up. Just hoped it wouldn't come up. And it never did. No one asked me about it or anything. It's too hectic. No one remembers shit on Black Friday. And woo! Never got in trouble.
Isn't that how the world seems to work?
That's awesome.
God was smiling on you. He wanted you to see Back to the Future 2.
And because of that, I always remember that when I watch Back to the Future 2.
The thing I remember is the Pizza Hut promotion
mm-hmm.
where you got sunglasses.
Yes.
And they were the sunglasses the kids were wearing in the future. And I had the blue and yellow ones with the little visors above the eye. And when we went back to school after Thanksgiving break, I wore them every day. I remember it was snowing, and I was like, we were walking down to the bus stop, and I was like, these sunglasses are incredibly useful. They keep the snow away from my eyes.
But they won't be invented for a while, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, them from the future.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about Back to the Future, because obviously after you watched Back to the Future 2 enough times...
Notice how we haven't brought up Back to the Future 3.
Well, we will eventually.
Yeah,
but
we will.
When I watch... You can't watch Back to the Future 3 just off the cuff. You have to watch Back to the Future 2 first, then watch it. Because it does have a great setup going to Back to the Future 3. It makes you want to watch it after you finish Back to the Future 2. But... did you go back and, or had you watched Back to the Future a million times on VHS before Part 2 came out?
Yes, a million times.
Right.
I probably got just as much use out of Back to the Future 2 as I did The Goonies. Like,
nice.
I mean, it was constantly getting rented. Because I remember you couldn't buy it yet. It wasn't one of those movies
you could
buy retail.
Isn't
you
that
had
crazy?
To rent it.
Or you had a friend, like my uncle, you know, there's always somebody who had two VCRs that would dupe stuff all the time.
Yeah, that's what my dad and I did. We were known for that.
Yeah. or you had the cable. I remember, like, you'd
then
have
they
those...
came out with that infernal Macrovision. It made everything scrambly, and you had to get the box in the back of Popular Mechanics or Popular Science.
Why did they even bother with any of that crap? It's so stupid.
People did it anyways. They're idiots.
But the thing, one thing that about Back to the Future, can we just bring up first is the Alan Silvestri score.
It's iconic. At the moment I hear it, I want to watch the movie.
Yeah, it just...
In fact, I think the score is better than the movie. It transcends the movie.
Yeah, and I love different parts of the movie. We'll talk about where the score, I just think, shines through. Because I wasn't always an Alan Silvestri fan. Like, I am of his Back to the Future scores.
Yeah.
Like, his score of The Abyss, you know, James Cameron's The Abyss, it always drives me nuts with the weird, like... You know, the little choir, whatever.
I just think it's a Halo type of music.
Real obvious kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I really love his Back to the Future score. It's probably his best work.
Yeah, it is. It's up there with, and again, Dave Grusin's best work, Goonies. You know, right. It's something about these 80s film scores that are awesome.
He also did a great soundtrack to Roger Rabbit. That I always remember.
See, I never watched Roger Rabbit enough to notice. I'm not a Roger Rabbit guy.
It's very Back to the Future-y. You could tell it's the same composer when you listen to it.
Like, I think Roger Rabbit came along in a time in my life where I was just kind of indifferent. Mm-hmm. I was probably like in my mid to early teens.
That
like
was
maybe
my
tens. I was
in my heyday of thinking about film all the time, where I would like. Get every episode of Starlog, and mm-hmm. it would have articles about Roger Rabbit. So from a technical standpoint, you know, I'm like telling my friends who don't even care, like, they got licenses from all the different cartoons, like Disney and Warner Brothers are going to be in the same scenes together, and it's just people looking at you like,
yeah, like I can appreciate that now.
Yeah.
You know, as an adult, I can appreciate the film more. In fact, I should probably revisit it. I haven't watched it in a very long time.
When I was a kid, you know, there's a lot of me always telling people stuff that they didn't want to hear and them just staring blankly at my face.
But you know what it is? I totally get that because I still get that now. You know, it's like I want to talk about it. I want to share it with people. That's why we do the podcast.
Yeah, I just have enthusiasm. And one thing.
Yeah, and when you can't share it, it's defeating.
Right. And, you know, one thing I get from Back to the Future is just how tightly scripted it is. Mm-hmm. You know, I can feel like those guys, like, man, they're excited to do film and stuff. Because I think, what had they done before then? Used Cars was the movie that I'd seen, and I remember watching with my uncle. It's, you know, it's an adult comedy, but it's really mm-hmm. funny. I even referenced Used Cars in our Star Wars show on accident. I didn't mean to, but...
Yeah, it's a great film.
It is. It's a hilarious movie, and I believe Bob Gale, Bob Gale and Zemeckis wrote that, so they had written Used Cars first. Uh-huh. And they did a movie called I Want to Hold Your Hand, where they interacted with the Beatles and stuff, the main characters. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that sometime in my life. I guess it was funny. But I guess Romancing the Stone is what he made before Back to the Future in 84. And I remember wanting to see that really bad because remember in the commercials, Michael Douglas had a pump shotgun. He was shooting windows and stuff. And I was like,
His head ends up between her legs.
Yeah. Yes. And
like, that's the image I remember most from Romancing the Stone is them going down a mudslide and his head ending up between her splayed out legs.
Well, I always remember my dad.
As a kid going, why is that funny?
You know how my dad took me to see Back to the Future, but he didn't take me to see Romancing the Stone. I think he took Laura or something. So I was like, I wanted to see Romancing the Stone. He goes, oh, you wouldn't like it. It's more of a girl's movie. And I was like, oh, really? And years later, when I see it on cable, I'm like, he's full of shit. I totally would have been into this.
Yeah.
What an asshole. So maybe that's why he took me to Back to the Future. I don't know. Like, he even knew Robert Zemeckis directed it. I don't know. But anyway, what were we talking about? Yes, the head and the lap thing was pretty, like, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, I don't get it.
Yeah. What was that, 84 it came out?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Back to the Future, Bill.
Okay.
I'm excited to talk about. Let's talk about the movie as it begins, right? Of course, you always have the the clocks. The
yes. This combination of the clocks and the full introduction to the character that is Doc Brown,
right?
Like the almost manic quality to all these experiments, the clocks. You have the almost Rube Goldberg esque dog feeder.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's, the toaster. There was just, and then you see, like, the plutonium and all that. And it's like, what in the hell is going on with this guy?
I love the way it sets up with the clocks and the, I believe the TV turns on. And mm-hmm. You see the coffee maker. It's like everything's on, but nobody's there.
Yeah.
And you get
and that's, you know what? That's a perfect description of Doc Brown.
Yeah, nobody's there. He's preoccupied.
There's like everything's going on, but nobody's at home.
Right. And it's like they show the newspaper article that says Doc Brown's home burned down, most likely some experiment. So he's basically living in his garage, his laboratory, isn't he? Where's house?
Yeah, because that's all that's left.
Right. So his house burned down, and
you don't get to see the house until the was it the second film? Like the or did we do we see it in the first?
Yeah, we do because
that's where
Marty goes. But I love that whole establishing shot of the clocks, and it slowly introduces little elements of him. Mm-hmm. And you see the newscast, and it's talking about this place basically refuting the story that they have missing plutonium.
In other news, officials at the Pacific Nuclear Research Facility have denied the rumor that a case of missing plutonium was in fact stolen from their vault 2 weeks ago. Olivian terrorist group had claimed responsibility.
You know what? One thing I notice about the movie, because I love in these old NIMH mini movies to point out like corporate sponsors or plugs of things. You know?
Oh God, yeah.
One of the first shots we see is a messy bed where Doc has been sleeping and a bunch of Burger King wrappers everywhere.
Yep,
have you noticed
everywhere.
That? And then the radio turns on, and it's like, Toyota, get the new Toyota. And it's all about Toyota trucks and cars in 1985.
October is inventory time. So right now, Statler Toyota is making the best deals of the year on all 1985 model Toyotas.
And so I'm like, okay, the movie's just started. We already are craving Burger King. We want to go test drive a Toyota.
I really want a black Toyota truck.
Yeah, 4x4.
Can't you just see it taking it up to the lake?
Laying in that, looking at the stars.
Some sleeping bags in the back.
Well, then we get Marty. Marty shows up, and I love how, you know, he's like gross. You know, you don't even see his face right away. But that's another thing that's cool. How, okay, Marty shows up, but they don't show him yet. You just see his feet. He kicks the skateboard over. The skateboard hits the plutonium.
Hey, Doc. Doc! Hello, anybody home? Einstein, come here, boy. What's going on? Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. That is disgusting.
Every time I see this movie, I always laugh at the amp thing. The...
Yes. One thing about this movie that drives me crazy, and it's film nerds again love to point out that the amp signature, like the sign on it, is the code for the device from Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, really?
CRM114.
So it's a movie reference?
Yeah, it's a movie reference. It's like, that's the device that was supposed to stop the bombs in Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, you know that, right?
No, I don't.
Maybe I do, but I don't care.
But one thing that's cool about this movie is how there's foreshadowing throughout the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even at the very beginning, you know, it talks about how the plutonium's missing. Then you see the case of plutonium there. And you see Burger King wrappers. You know, later on we're going to see more Burger King in the movie.
Yeah. Pepsi free, please.
Right.
But well, I love that. You got to pay for it, son.
The whole guitar amp thing with the overload is hilarious.
When I was a kid, I was like, why would anybody want to play in front of that?
Yeah. Just jam out.
Like, does his ears not hurt? Like, I guess as a kid, I was too logical.
I honestly,
I'm like, why would he do that?
I think that scene is really for anyone who plays guitar.
Rock and roll.
Like, they watch that scene, they're like, yeah. Like, they totally, you know, jam out to that scene,
yeah,
you know?
That's all. That's the only people it's for.
Whoa. Rock and roll.
But again, it shows Marty. Like, one thing, I've seen the movie so many times, I'm like, when did Marty meet Doc Brown and start hanging out with him and stuff?
Yeah, what? I would love to know that story.
Right, but I do.
Like they've always known each other somehow.
Yeah, and if you think about time travel and stuff, I guess Doc Brown knew he'd always eventually meet Marty.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I love Doc calls up and tells Marty, you know, to meet him.
Yo!
Marty, is that you?
Hey, Doc, where are you?
Hey, God, I found you. Listen, can you meet me at Twin Pines Mall tonight at 1:15? I've made a major breakthrough, and I'll need your assistance.
Wait a minute, 1:15 in the morning?
Yeah.
Doc, what's going on? Where have you been all week?
Working.
And you know, all the clocks go off in the background. Finally, we're going to learn something, and his experiment, you know, my experiment worked! All the clocks... And I still don't understand his clock experiment. Do you?
All of them are exactly how many minutes late? Like 25 minutes late or something?
Right. And he goes, wait, Doc, are you telling me that...
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that it's 8:25?
Precisely.
Damn. I'm late for school.
And cue what? Huey Lewis, yeah!
Power of love.
Dun, 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 dun. And what does Doc Brown live right next to, Bill? Like, right next to his house.
Burger King?
Yes. I mean, it's like... feet from the door. No wonder he
lives
Burger
in
King.
The Burger King.
No wonder he has Burger King wrappers everywhere. That's where he eats every day.
He looks great for it.
Yeah, he does. Doc
must
looks
be
really
the Burger
healthy.
King of the 80s. They were using grass-fed beef.
But automatically, you know, I see Texaco. You know, one thing that I love is how all the movies do this, where they're on a location somewhere in a city street and round the corner, and then you're on that Universal lot.
Yep. As he's riding on the back of that guy's Jeep,
yeah,
and it's pulling down through, and you see like the town square and all that. I'm like, hey, shouldn't there be Christmas trees in that lot?
Yeah,
like it's automatically. I'm like, hey, that's Gremlins.
Yeah, this is the the theater's in the same spot. Come on. There's blatant Burger King.
There's a certain charm to that, though, isn't there? Like, it's a fondness.
It's so sad that place burned down, because I would love to visit that Universal.
Did it really? Did that area burn down?
Yeah, I believe that whole thing. They might have rebuilt it, but I don't know if it's ever the same.
But it's not the original.
Yeah.
Wow, that stinks.
One thing, do you ever notice that's blatant that Marty's hanging on the back of the guy's Jeep and the guy turns and looks at him and Marty gives kind of like, ah, shucks, kind of look? The guy's wearing a huge Mountain Dew logo cap. Yep.
Isn't that Bob Gale?
I don't know.
I always, I'm probably totally wrong, but I always thought it was someone connected to the film.
Yeah, like Richard Donner is visiting the set or something. What are you doing on the set? But, yeah, I don't know. But the Mountain Dew cap always pulls me back. I'm like, oh, come on. What shameless plug.
Was this really the first, like, shameless advertising film?
I don't know. It's pretty, it got some pretty shameless moments. Well, Back to the Future 2, it's all Pepsi. Pepsi, Pepsi, Pepsi is everywhere in that movie.
Well, Mountain Dew is a Pepsi product.
But we see Marty, he arrives at school. He's got a super hot girlfriend who I can't wait to see in all three movies. And
very cute. Jennifer's awesome.
All right, come on. I think we're safe.
You know, this time it wasn't my fault.
The doc said all his clocks 25 minutes slow.
Doc, I might understand you're still hanging around with Dr. Emmett Brown McFly. Party flip for you, Miss Parker. And one for you, McFly. I believe that makes four in a row. Now, let me give you Nicholsworth a free advice, young man. This so-called Dr. Brown is dangerous. He's a real nutcase. You hang around with him, you're going to end up in big trouble.
Oh, yes, sir.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker. You remind me of your father when he went here. He was a slacker, too.
Can I go now, Mr. Strickland?
Have you ever wondered why is Strickland such a prick? Like, would we find out somewhere? But he's just a dick, isn't he?
Yeah. It's hereditary, apparently. It runs in his family.
I mean, I can understand him being strict and not liking slackers, but he even, like, takes it out on victims.
He makes it personal.
Yeah, he even, you know, gives George McFly a hard time. You're a slacker!
Just like your dad. Your dad was an asshole, too.
Yeah, it's just like, geez, man, couldn't you just lighten up a little?
I notice your band is on the roster for the dance auditions after school today. Why even bother, McFly? You don't have a chance. You're too much like your old man. No McFly ever amounted to anything in the history of Hill Valley.
Yeah, well, history is going to change.
And what kind of name is McFly, anyway?
Irish.
Is that like a real name? Does someone have that last name?
I have no idea, but it would be impossible now. I'd have to go on Ancestry.com.
Well, you know, one thing I love about movies like this is when they take place in a town. This one is Hill Valley.
Hill Valley.
You know, I love these mulberry type places, you know, these...
I don't know. I don't think Hill Valley's very mulberry-ish because it seems pretty decrepit.
Yeah. And it seems to be filled with assholes, too.
Yeah, it's filled with assholes and apparently, you know, manipulative, lazy types. I know I don't want to live in Lion Estates.
Well, let me ask you this. Here's a trivia question. Back to the Future trivia question. Okay. What is Marty McFly's band name? Because it's really...
Pinheads.
The Pinheads, yeah.
The Pinheads.
A really throwaway line there.
It's one of those lines that I always went... Pinheads?
It's like, couldn't they be more creative there?
All right. We're the Pinheads.
There's all these bands, and they're so typical 80s bands. Like, you've got the girl band, you've got the ones that almost look like they're the Smiths.
Uh-huh.
And then, it's just like all... And then the guy who's playing guitar with him... He looks like shit. He looks like someone I've always thought, who is
he
that?
He looks like the guy from Def Leppard, as I thought.
Yeah, and he's got the cap on and all. And apparently that's Michael J. Fox's guitar teacher.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's one of those stupid facts that I always remember. Because I remember looking it up like, who the hell is that guy? He looks like someone.
But I love how they're playing Power of Love by Huey Lewis, but that keyboard is like, dun, dun.
It's louder than everything.
Yeah,
everything.
And of course, I'll never forget this Entertainment Tonight doing one of their, like, no duh segments. Like, shut up. It was like Mary Hart going, guess who that square teacher is in Back to the Future? It's none other than rocker Huey Lewis. And it's like, we all knew that when we saw the freaking movie. It's a guy from Die Hard. Come on.
Yes, it is. That is the guy from Die Hard.
It is. That's not Huey Lewis. It's his lookalike. And he sucks at acting still.
Terrible.
I'm afraid you're just too darn loud. Next place.
I remember, I think even in the theater, you see that and someone goes, that's Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
That's Huey. That's Huey Lewis. Oh, it is? Oh, the Why Want a New Drug guy? It's like, shut up down there. Come on, we're watching the movie. Yes, it's Huey Lewis.
Sports.
Yeah, you know, sports, hip to be square. I don't know if that'd come out
this
yet.
This is it. You know, the guy's the head in the sand. Right.
But also, again, let's get back to the foreshadowing through the entire movie. Like, at the beginning, you know, Mayor Goldie Wilson. Re-elect Mayor Goldie Wilson.
Re-elect Mayor Goldie Wilson. Progress is his middle name.
Why are they telling us that? Are we going to even know?
For the longest time, I always thought that on that van he had gold teeth. Like, it was a white picture and gold teeth. But I think it's just lighting, hitting it right in the same spot.
Right. One thing that I... that Strickland said to Marty is something, it was about, why even bother? You'll always be a loser. And then later on, Marty's all bummed because, you know, they told him his band was too loud and...
I'm never going to get a chance to play in front of anybody.
Marty, one rejection isn't the end of the world.
Nah, I just don't think I'm cut out for music.
But you're good, Marty. You're really good. And this audition tape of yours is great. You've got to send it into the record company. It's like Doc's
always
saying.
Yeah, I know. If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
He's like, what? You know, he just all rejected. And he sounds just like his dad later, foreshadowing of that. Why even bother? What if someone hears? And what if I get rejected? I don't know if I can handle that.
What if I send in the tape and they don't like it? I mean, what if they say I'm no good? What if they say, get out of here, kid. You got no future. I mean, I just don't think I can take that kind of rejection. Jesus, I'm starting to sound like my old man.
Come on, he's not that bad.
Which is pretty much the credo I live by.
Yeah, same here.
But Marty gets... mind gets... he starts to wander when he sees that Toyota 4x4, Bill.
Oh, look at that thing.
Check out that 4x4. That is hot.
Okay, back her up.
Someday, Jennifer. Someday. Wouldn't it be great? Take that truck up to the lake. Throw a couple of sleeping bags in the back. Lie out underneath the stars.
Stop it.
What?
Jennifer would totally have sex with me if I had that truck.
Is that what he's talking about? I thought they were going to look at the stars. What a perv.
Yeah.
I love even the 80s workout girl gear of the girls who walk by, you know, and he's like looking. My dad always says you. That's another thing.
Leotards and leg warmers are hot.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing in the movie you always hear that saying of, you can accomplish anything if you put your mind to it. That's one thing that resonates through the movie. You can accomplish anything if you put your mind to it. I guess like time travel is what they're telling us, Bill, if we just work hard on it.
Yeah, we just time travel speed, just go back. Just got to pursue your dreams.
Yes, very much so. Now,
forget about everything else. Just screw how miserable your life is.
When I watch this, I just admire the foreshadowing, everything, also the setting up. Like, he's talking with his girlfriend there, and then all of a sudden the lady's like, save the clock tower!
Save the clock tower! Save the clock tower. Mayor Wilson is sponsoring an initiative to replace that clock. 30 years ago, lightning struck that clock tower, and the clock hasn't run since. We at the Hill Valley Preservation Society think it should be preserved exactly the way it is, as part of our history and heritage.
There you go, lady. There's a quarter.
Thank you. Don't forget to take a flyer.
You know, you're like, okay, what is this all about? And then,
why is this lady so crazy and up in his face? All he wants to do is kiss his hot girlfriend.
He gives her a quarter, whatever. Here's a quarter, lady. Leave us alone. And then his girlfriend leaves the phone number on the back, and it says, I love you. And, you cue, that's the power of love.
That's
like
the power of the AMC Eagle. Every time I watch that, I can't help but think my best friend as a kid, Josh, his dad had an AMC Eagle, Woody sides and all.
Oh,
and
man, there's
that dude, car is so ugly.
Speaking of cars, my car that I drove around for the longest time, I had a 1985 Toyota Celica Supra, and it was silver. There's a part in the movie where he skateboards by my car. And I always freeze frame it and go, oh, there she is.
Oh,
and I miss that car.
My first love.
Dude, I felt like that car was a DeLorean. You know, like, this is my time machine. It was a badass car. So whenever he skates by that, I just have to freeze frame it and go, ah. But that was the year, 1985, I guess.
That's a great year.
Great year for Toyotas, Bill. Great year. And also, I wondered this, because I never tried it. There was a couple years where I rode a skateboard, but
Who didn't at that point in time? That was the... I remember getting a skateboard for Christmas, and I ended up riding it on my butt. Like, I could not... Probably the bearings or whatever those things are that make the board, like, level and be able to manipulate. I couldn't do it. I'd fall on my face every time, so I just figured I'd ride it. Like, it was a... Like, I'd just sit on it and push myself.
Right. Well, I always wondered, was there a spur of kids grabbing bumpers and getting free rides on cars and getting killed?
Absolutely. In fact, in Australia, there's a warning. They had to put a warning in the movie not to do that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Like, do not try this.
I remember reading that in Australia, there's a warning either before the film or after the film for kids not to do that.
Like, it may be, Marty is a cool dude. He can do it. He can pull this off. Regular kids, you're not pulling this off. Because it's very dangerous. And it's, I'd even read that Robert Zemeckis said that they thought about the time machine being a refrigerator, you know, but he pictured lots of kids getting in refrigerators playing time machine. It was just a bad idea. It's like, well, what about the skateboard thing?
Well, I get in the refrigerator whenever I think a nuclear bomb's going to go off.
That's right. Whenever there's a nuke.
Yeah. But I'm so glad they changed it from a refrigerator, because who the hell would want to get in a refrigerator?
Yeah. The DeLorean was just the perfect idea. But also that scene with Jennifer, she talks about, does your mom know? And he's like,
yeah, get out of town. My mom thinks I'm going camping with the guys. Well, Jennifer, my mother would freak out if she knew I was going up there with you. And I get the standard lecture about how she never did that kind of stuff when she was a kid. I mean, look, I think the woman was born a nun.
She would never understand
that. Yeah. And
when he shows up at home, you know, we get our first Biff and George scene where the car is trashed and Biff's
why didn't you tell me there was a blind spot?
I can't believe you loaned me a car without telling me it had a blind spot. I could have been killed.
Now, Biff, now, I never noticed that the car had any blind spot before when I would drive it. Hi, son.
But what are you, blind, McFly? It's there. How else do you explain that wreck out there?
Now, Biff, can I assume that your insurance is going to pay for the damage?
Well, my insurance? It's your car. Your insurance should pay for it. I want to know who's going to pay for this. I spilled beer all over when that car smashed into me. Who's going to pay my cleaning bill?
Now, Biff... One thing, can I just say right away that Crispin Glover rocks in this movie?
Crispin, I am so disappointed that they couldn't work things out with Crispin Glover.
I know.
He owns the movie. He honestly does. His scenes are so perfect. Anytime he's in a scene, the way the understated, like, neurotic quality that he plays it steals it from Michael J. Fox. Like,
He's fantastic, and he wins you over.
Yeah.
Where you love him, you know. Even there's so many great moments with him, but early on, when you see how Biff just totally beats him down, and he goes, "You get those reports done?"
And where's my reports?
Well, I haven't finished those up yet, but you know, I figured since they weren't due till
hello, anybody home?
Oh.
Think, McFly, right. Think. I gotta have time to get them retyped.
Yeah.
Do you realize what would happen if I handed my reports in your handwriting? I'll get fired. You wouldn't want that to happen, would you? Would you?
Of course not, Biff. No, I wouldn't want that to happen.
You know, just all those scenes where you know, we see a version of that later on also, but I love how...
This is also the first time Biff calls Marty a butthead.
What are you looking at, butthead?
But the scene where Marty's just standing there watching how his dad deals with Biff and gets walked all over, you know, he's kind of ashamed of his dad.
I needed that car tomorrow night, Dad. I mean, do you have any idea how important this was to me? Do you have any clue?
I know, and all I can say is I'm sorry.
Yeah. And you wonder that. That comes up several times where, like, were you adopted? How did you turn out like this, Marty? You know, he's kind of his own man. But we get to... and there's another moment where, you know, he says...
Say hi to your mom for me.
Like, we know he had a thing for his mom there. And we get to meet his brother and sister, Wendy Jo Sperber, who was always hilarious.
Every time I see her, I feel sad.
Yeah,
like,
me
you
too.
Know, it just, I can't see a movie without her and then not get depressed a little bit, because I think she's fantastic as an actress. This movie, but I think the movie that she did that she really shined in the most for me was Moving Violations.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just such a goofy movie, and she actually gets to do some really funny stuff. Like, there's a scene, I think it's Fred Willard, where she takes her car to, or what was it? Yeah, she takes her. She goes to like a mechanic, and he's like, "Oh, we're gonna put a couple gallons of oil in you, and take you out on the highway and get you running real fast." And she assumes that he means her, so she like drinks all this Wesson oil, and then she's running out on the highway. And it's just one of those movies. It's so goofy and funny, and I just think she's fantastic.
I'll always remember her from Bosom Buddies, because I love that show.
Yeah, of course.
She was great on that. When we meet his family, you know, that's one thing I love about this movie. Before we even get to meet Doc and all the time travel stuff, they set up all the family stuff, which is great. They show they're basically this weird, nerdy family, right?
They're dorky. Like, they're just very... The brother's very awkward. He works at Burger King.
Burger King right next to Doc Brown's, probably.
Yep.
His sister's a mess, but...
The mother's an alcoholic.
But, man, just going back to Crispin Glover, that laugh, that...
And he's totally disconnected from everything. He's so, like, disappointed with himself and his life that everyone's having a conversation and he's watching The Honeymooners.
He's not even paying attention.
Yeah, he's not paying attention.
One thing, I've noticed, like, in this scene when Marty goes and sits down, the scene just happens around him. He doesn't say a word. They just, the family is doing things like, "Oh, Mom, tell us how you met Dad again."
"Yeah, Mom, we know. You've told us this story a million times. You felt sorry for him, so you decided to go with him to the Fish Under the Sea dance."
"No, no, it was the Enchantment Under the Sea dance. Our first date. I'll never forget it."
Jailbird Joey, we get all that scene.
Yeah, the cake.
"Your Uncle Joey didn't make parole again.
Everybody, happy to you.
I think it would be nice if you all dropped him a line."
"Uncle Jailbird Joey?
He's your brother, Mom."
"Yeah, I think it's a major embarrassment having an uncle in prison. We all make mistakes in life, children."
But, you know, when his son says, you know, "Don't change your oil, Dad," when he kisses Mom, he's like...
"God damn it, I'm..."
"David, watch your mouth. And come here and kiss your mother before you go. Come here.
Come on, Mom, make it fast. I missed my bus. And see you later, Pop." "Woo! Come on, time to change that oil."
You know, Lorraine's dad hit him with a car. "You never did tell me. What were you doing in that tree, George?" "Huh?"
"Still don't understand what Dad was doing in the middle of the street."
"What was it, George? Bird watching?"
"What, Lorraine? What?
What, Lorraine?" He, like, never answers.
Keeping Tom.
I love that. That's it. But that's great how it sets up, like, what was he doing in that tree? Hey, we'll find out later.
Yep. The Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
I wonder how many versions of the script they had to have written it many times to get this down right.
Yeah.
But,
the revisions and the fact-checking and the timeline and all that, I mean, that would confuse the hell out of me. It still confuses the hell out of me.
Yeah. Well, that's Marty. He's pissed because he was going to take the car to the lake with Jennifer, Mm-hmm. Then his mom talks about, I don't like that girl. Any girl who calls a boy.
I don't like her, Marty. Any girl who calls up a boy is just asking for trouble.
Oh, Mother, there's nothing wrong with calling a boy.
I think it's terrible. Girls chasing boys. When I was your age, I never chased a boy or called a boy or sat in a parked car with a boy.
Mm-hmm. You're just asking for trouble. She's going to be pregnant in no time, right?
Yeah.
Because Marty's mom was never like that. She's just not that kind of girl.
No, she doesn't. She's not like, she doesn't look at men's underwear or take their pants off while they're unconscious.
One thing that I noticed also that in that scene on the table, Diet Pepsi is prevalent.
Yes.
Marty has Diet Pepsi in his room and on the table. He loves Diet Pepsi. And we get
just something without sugar.
And I always want, what the hell is George eating? Is that peanut brittle? Like,
yeah,
that...
it is. Because I, for some reason, when I was a kid, when I saw it, I was like, what the hell is that? And then I just was obsessed with peanut brittle. After that movie, it was all about getting a box of peanut brittle. I would beg my parents for it.
Every once in a while, it's good.
It is.
I don't
until
have
it destroys
often.
Your teeth.
Yeah. But George loves it.
Loves it.
But when Marty wakes up and, you know, he goes to the mall, we see Twin Pines Mall very prominently.
There, yeah.
We get to meet Einie, the dog, Einstein. Oh, I love it. And then we have the reveal of the DeLorean as the mm-hmm. truck opens.
Einstein! Hey, Einstein, where's the dog, boy? Huh?
The perfect car to turn into a time machine.
Yeah, I love how Marty's like, Tuck, that's a DeLorean. And he's like, never mind that, Marty. He just film all this, you know.
Good evening. I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing on the parking lot at Twin Pines Mall. It's Saturday morning, October 26, 1985, 1:18 a.m. And this is temporal experiment number one.
So we learn everything as Marty learns it, that about the time machine, that this is... Or he doesn't say time machine for a long time. All he does is do some things, and he goes, I'm Dr. Brown, and he puts Einstein in the car, and then he's got the remote control and mm-hmm. everything.
And there's a man in a dog suit driving the car.
You told me that. I honestly never noticed.
Just go to that scene, and just before the car is starting to spark and go into the, you know... The whole flashy mode. There is, you can see his arms on the steering wheel and this static dog mask.
Yeah.
And you can see his arms moving, driving the car. It is the funniest thing. Every time I see it, I laugh.
You mean it's not really a remote?
No, I couldn't. I was, shocking.
I love that Doc Brown's got his little remote control.
That I wanted that remote. I think every year for Christmas, I would get a remote control car, a Tyco remote control car, just so I could play with the remote. I think I would play with the car for maybe 20 minutes until the battery died, and then totally lose interest in it. But just the fact that I could like pretend like when you get this thing up to 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Oh, I love that line.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour. You're gonna see some serious shit.
Just the way Christopher Lloyd delivers that line.
Yeah, it's awesome. And Marty's just looking at him like, what in the hell?
There's so many things about that whole scene I love is when Marty starts to slowly inch away from him. You know, like,
he like looks at him.
And he comes back. Yeah. It's great. They really set up that scene well. And
they
he's
do.
Like, when he's like, you disintegrated Einstein. That's the first thing he thinks is,
what did I tell you? 88 miles per hour! The thermal displacement occurred exactly 1:20 a.m. in 0 seconds!
Ah, jeez, Christ. Jesus Christ, Doc, you disintegrated Einstein.
Calm down, Marty, I didn't disintegrate anything. The molecular structure of both Einstein and the car are completely intact.
Where the hell are they?
they?
The appropriate question is, when the hell are they? You see, Einstein has just become the world's first time traveler. I sent him into the future.
1 minute into the future, to be exact. And precisely 1:21 a.m. in 0 seconds, we shall catch up with him in the time machine.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
He pretty much killed his dog and the DeLorean.
No, he's totally intact.
I didn't disintegrate anything. And then, you know, he shows them, come here, I'll show you how it works. And then we see, and there's one thing that I've always loved about the movie, and it pulls me, you know, totally selfish reasons or whatever, that the movie takes place on October 26, 1985, which is my birthday. So it'd be
1985.
That's my, 1985. That's my 14th birthday right there, that the movie. So whenever I watch it, I'm like,
awesome. I wish I had a connection like that.
It's so cool that my birthday is the day of the movie, and just every time I watch it, I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's like home. You know what I mean?
So whenever that stupid Twitter, Facebook hoax thing was going around, you're like, wait a second.
It's like, what?
That's not right.
What was that? I'm not sure.
I can't even remember. It was some stupid thing that for some stupid reason, stupid people kept putting on their stupid Facebook page.
Come here. I'll show you how it works. First, you turn the time circuits on. This readout tells you where you're going. This one tells you where you are. This one tells you where you were. You input your destination time on this keypad. Say you want to see the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Or witness the birth of Christ. Here's a red-letter date in the history of science, November 5th, 1955. Yes, of course, November 5th, 1955.
Why? I don't get what happened.
That was the day I invented time travel. I remember it vividly. I was standing on the edge of my toilet, hanging a clock. The porcelain was wet. I slipped, hit my head on the edge of the sink. And when I came to, I had a revelation. A vision. A picture in my head. A picture of this. This is what makes time travel possible. The flux capacitor.
Flux capacitor?
It's taken me almost 30 years of my entire family fortune to realize the vision of that day.
Well, one thing that I love how it sets up that he says, you know, this sucker... it takes some plutonium. He goes, are you telling me?
This is heavy duty, Doc. This is great. Does it run like on regular unleaded gasoline?
Unfortunately, no. It requires something with a little more kick. Plutonium.
Plutonium. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that this sucker is nuclear?
Hey, keep rolling. Keep rolling there. No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity I need.
Doc, you don't just walk into a store and buy plutonium. Did you rip that off?
Of course, from a group of Libyan nationalists. They wanted me to build them a bomb, so I took their plutonium and in turn gave them a shiny bomb casing full of used pinball machine parts.
They wanted me to make a bomb.
Which, this is the 80s. The terrorists are...
Holy shit, yeah.
They have...
This is the scary time. Like the, you know, Gaddafi and... what was that? The guy that used to scare the shit out of me as a kid was that, shit. What was the guy with the white beard and the, like, he was the Iranian guy.
The Ayatollah?
The Ayatollah Khomeini. Yeah. Oh my God, man. He was, big.
When I watch this movie, my mind goes into weird places when he says he suckered some terrorists. What I'm thinking, he's building the time machine, and he realizes he needs plutonium to run it. So he goes looking for someone who has plutonium, and he runs into Libyan terrorists and tells them he's going to make them a bomb, but then he suckers them. It's just crazy. There's a whole side story here.
Well, it kind of shows you how totally out of it Doc Brown is, that this is no big deal to him. That, you know, this is a means to an end. That he totally just suckered Libyan terrorists you know, for a nuclear weapon, for fuel for a nuclear weapon.
Yeah,
and he's, it's his... no big deal. He can make his time machine now, so.
Yeah, I love, they also put Marty and him in their nuclear suits because he needs to be in that for later on in the movie, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, I have a feeling that suit didn't protect them from anything.
Yeah.
But this is also where we start the whole gigawatt thing, where it's, in the script, it's spelled J-I-G-O, Watts. And it's because, I guess, Bob Gale and Zemeckis talked to somebody who they thought was a scientist and pronounced it gigawatts.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually gigawatts. So this is like one of those little nitpicky things that people always, you know, make fun of. But to me, this is a movie based in the fantasy realm. And who's to say there isn't such a thing as a gigawatt?
I never knew that. I just thought it was a gigawatt. I thought it was different than a gigawatt.
If somebody pronounced G-I-G-A, gigawatt, as gigawatt, and it stuck.
I thought it was like...
Nobody ever corrected them.
I thought it was like million or billion. I thought it was like, a gigawatt is this much, but a gigawatt is this much. You know what I mean?
No, it's a mistake. It's just an honest mistake.
Wow. You know what would have been funny is in the present day, he says... 1.21 gigawatts or gigawatts, 1.21 gigawatts. And then in the past, he goes, I think what I mean is a gigawatt, you know, because he doesn't say it right in the past.
That would be awesome. But it would also be cool because so many times science kind of replicates science fiction. I mean, without science fiction, there's a lot of things we wouldn't have now. I think it would be cool if somehow, you know, another level of measurement was created as a gigawatt. You know,
yeah.
I think that would be funny. It would be charming. Do it.
So the terrorists show up and pour...
Two terrorists.
Yeah, two terrorists.
In a VW van. One with an AK-47, one driving. You would think that if these terrorists were able to get a hold of plutonium, they would send more than two in a VW bus.
They could pull... I love when Doc says...
Oh, my God. They found me. I don't know how, but they found me.
Look hard, Marty!
Who? Who?
Who do you think? The idiots!
Holy shit!
It's like, well, you're at the local mall. Maybe they just drove around until
they... You're kind of the only one in the middle of the night at the Twin Pines Mall.
Yeah. But we see Doc. We just barely got to know Doc, and he's dead. He gets gunned down.
Yeah.
And Marty takes off in the...
That's one of my favorite scenes. He pulls out this massive revolver, and he's, like, aiming and trying to pull it, and he looks at it like he's going to... Like, he's like, what the hell? And there's no bullets in it.
He's just going to... But I love he goes, I'll like, drive... I'll dri-. He's all heroic there for a second. He goes... And he's like,
I just love the way that Christopher Lloyd plays Doc Brown is classic. And it's like he based it on, I think he said Albert Einstein and some composer that had the crazy hair or something.
Oh, yeah, Leopold?
Yes.
That's another thing, like, we have Crispin Glover doing his thing and Christopher Lloyd doing his thing. So really, Marty or Michael J. Fox, he gets to play it straight most of the time and just react off of them.
Yeah, and Christopher Lloyd wasn't the first choice for the role.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I have to remember who was.
I couldn't imagine anyone else playing him now.
Yeah.
But also, Thomas Wilson, they get to be these crazy characters around Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, the film is such a character piece. Like, it's the characters that really kind of shine. That's why I would love to see how Eric Stoltz was, because although Michael J. Fox has wonderful reactions and
he nails these kind of out of breath, crazy reactions to things, I think.
Yeah, he has, like, I equate some of his facial expressions and reactions to, like, how Johnny Carson was. Like, he just knows how to play it. Like, the wide eyes.
He does manic kind of well, like the...
Yeah. But I need to remember who the first choice was for Christopher Lloyd. Oh, it was John Lithgow! It was John Lithgow.
Oh, yeah, he would have been good. Dr. Lizardo.
Yeah, they wanted him, and he couldn't do it. And Christopher Lloyd, I think, actually dropped out of an off-Broadway play to do it.
Excellent. So then, you know, when Marty gets in the... I love the tease of... Remember, they've already set up 88 miles an hour is when you go through time. So we know that. So when he's in the chase in the with the VW van, we keep seeing him almost rev up to 88, but then he has to turn.
Yeah, and then he takes the turn, and it drops down.
Yeah. And then finally he hits it, and he goes through time. And I love the way it jumps to a field with a scarecrow.
I always want to know what he's thinking in that shot. When it's starting to go, and it's even before the car starts to spark, he's just so insistent on getting up to a certain speed that he's looking right at that photo hut, which, you know, that's like such a mark of the 80s. I mean, what mall didn't have a photo hut
right.
in the
But I'm also,
park,
are you
know?
Thinking, like, does he know he's about to run into that?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think. Like, what is he so scared that he's just, like, frozen in fear?
Yeah, because... He looks in the rearview mirror and he sees a guy pull out an RPG and he goes, holy shit, you know?
Yeah, and he's just like, maybe if I can go as fast as I can, you know, which is really tough in a DeLorean.
Yeah.
Oh, man, those things were underpowered pieces of shit. In fact, now when you buy them, because there's actually a company that rebought DeLorean and rebuilds them and has all kinds of stuff, they put new engines in them. They put, like, Volvo engines in them.
Right.
Because the original DeLorean engine was so bad.
Yeah, I think I read that the one in the movie is a six-cylinder, but they were four cylinders. A lot of them were four cylinders or something.
Yeah.
But he says...
See if you bastards can do 90.
And is he thinking? Like,
he's not
that's
thinking.
What I always think, like, is he really... Does he know that once he reaches 88, you know, did that just go in one ear and out the other when him and Doc were talking and he's thinking... You know, there's if I can get to 90, maybe I can outrun these guys.
Yeah, he totally is forgotten because it's like when he zaps into that field, he's just like, ah, you know, he doesn't know what's going on. And he's trying to get Miss. Oh, that's
and
one
he takes,
old man
takes out the pine tree.
Yeah, old man Peabody. Don't you love that? The he's crashed in the hay bale. I still, when I watch that scene, how did the DeLorean get in that position from when it crashed in the park?
Yeah.
Let's just forget about that, okay?
Suspension of disbelief. It's a time machine.
But I love his mask is down, and the door opens.
The whole family.
Yeah,
the whole family's out to see what's going on.
Dad, look!
Oh, what is it? Oh, what is it, Paul?
Looks like an airplane. Without wings.
That ain't no airplane. Look!
A spaceman?
Yeah.
Where he goes, Dad, shoot him! He's already mutated to human form!
It's already mutated into human form! Shoot it!
Take that, you mutated son of a bitch!
It's the old man Peabody, which, has already been established by Doc Brown, a guy who wanted to turn the whole, all of Hill Valley breed pine trees.
Old man Peabody owned all of this. He had this crazy idea about breeding pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two trees there, and he takes out one of them, and he goes, you took, killed my pine, you son of a bitch! And then they show Peabody mailbox.
Fly. Get a grip on yourself. It's all a dream. It's just a very intense dream.
One thing I want to know there, are they telegraphing way too much what they're referencing here in the movie? Like, are they going, okay, you know, here's this guy, Twin Pines, now he killed one?
I think it's fun.
It is fun.
Later on, like, they're trying extra hard to be clever.
Yeah.
But it's still fun. It's like they had no idea... I think they were entertaining themselves.
Yeah, I do love the reference. But also, I just wondered, like, after I watched the movie many times,
Yeah.
Did they overplay that where it's like, okay, we get it, but maybe not because...
No, they're entertaining themselves. They're having fun.
Yeah, and I do love that in the movie because later on when we see Lone Pine, I love that. I think it's hilarious.
The fact that that has persisted through history.
Yeah.
There was only one pine.
And the fact that the guy's pine tree got killed, it's like it never sat right with him again, where he's like, I'm changing it to Lone Pine.
He never recovered. That, in fact, that's probably what stopped him from wanting to become a pine tree farmer.
Yeah. It's like, why didn't he ever try to grow another one? No. They killed the tree. It's over. His dream is dead.
It was probably his favorite tree.
But what does he say? It must be some kind of airplane without wings. That's no airplane, Dan.
Yeah.
But, you know, Marty...
Some sci-fi pulpy magazine.
Marty hides the DeLorean and goes into town. I do love that. Every time I watch it, the bum, 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 bum. You know, Mr. Sandman. And he's walking around.
And it just shows how beautiful and idyllic Hill Valley is. Like, what happened? This is Hill Valley?
Oh, yeah. One thing I forgot to say. Marty sees Lion Estates before it's even built.
Yeah,
it's just
doesn't
a
he hides the sign.
Yeah, right behind
the sign. He hides
the car
behind a sign for it, right?
Mm-hmm. But I was, Texaco is still there. Like, even in the 50s, it's never changed location.
Full service.
Oh, don't you love that where they all run out?
I haven't seen a full service gas station in ages. Ages.
I remember my dad chuckling at that. I think he remembers that from childhood where they would, guys would run out and actually help you and stuff.
Yeah, check your oil. When I was a kid... my dad worked three jobs because he had, you know, three daughters and a son. And one of the jobs was at the Amoco station. And that's just what it was. You go there and they would do your windows, check your oil, check your tire pressure. I mean, it was everything. You'd go in, you'd wheel over that little tube and it would ding, ding. And you would... You know, they would come out and pump your gas for you and do everything. It was cool. Full service rule.
Hell yeah.
You never had to get out of the car.
One thing I wanted to notice, like, I wanted to point out was that we see Miller Beer in the background along with Texaco. So we still have that corporate sponsor there, the product placement.
They probably, like you said, they probably spent so much money that they needed it.
Yeah, definitely. I do love the 50 movies for 50 cents in air conditioned theater.
That's big.
I would totally go to the movies there in Hill Valley in the 55.
Absolutely. Whenever I see old buildings, like where I grew up, there was an old building next to what was now the St. Agnes Church, where I grew up in Ritchieville, Pennsylvania. And there is a building next to it that kind of faded paint on the side. It said Roxy Theater. It was one of those old theaters, and like I'm obsessed with old theaters now because of that, because of knowing there was an old theater in my hometown, my little dinky, you know, coal town. Like anytime I see like old theater buildings, I'm like obsessed with them. I just want to know the history of it, the films that were shown there.
There's that great nostalgia.
Who saw the movies
feeling
there? I love stuff like that.
Totally. I'm right there with you. I love it when it shows the whole town. You see the clock tower chimes. It works.
Yep. Kicking away. Tick-tocking.
I guess the fitness place is now a diner. You know what's one thing that when you see in the present day, that fitness place really looks like an empty building, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
But we get to see... I love that whole thing with Lou's diner when he goes,
"Hey, kid, what'd you do, jump ship? What? What's with the life preserver?"
Because he's wearing that orange vest thing, and I remember those vests.
How they made fun of that 80s fashion.
Yeah, it was great.
That was wonderful, because it was lampooning that whole thing. Like, at first, it's like, hey, he looks kind of cool. You know, he's got before he even has the life preserver on, when he's with Jennifer, he has a denim jacket with denim jeans, and it's just like, denim overload.
I know. When I was a kid, I was like, oh, man, I want that denim jacket. That's cool, man.
Denim on denim.
Marty was cool,
was a denim
man.
Shirt. Marty was awesome.
And Marty's
I
got
to be Marty McFly.
He's even got suspenders.
Yep.
He knew what he was doing.
He did.
But I love that in the scene in the diner when he looks up Doc Brown. And he's like, "Oh, thank God you're alive!" And the guy's like, "Are you gonna order anything?
Are you gonna order something, kid?"
Yeah. Give me a tab.
Tab? I can't give you a tab unless you order something.
All right. Give me a Pepsi free.
You want a Pepsi, pal? You're gonna pay for it.
Look, just give me something without any sugar in it, okay?
Then, in fact, Tab is a Coke product, I believe.
Right.
And Pepsi wanted them to remove it from the film, and they didn't. They said they did, but they didn't.
Yeah, he goes, I'll have a Tab. You can't have a Tab unless you order something. I'll have a Pepsi free. If you want a Pepsi, you're going to pay for it. I love that.
Just give me something without sugar.
Yeah, well, I guess Marty has a thing against sugar. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the 80s, you know.
Maybe that's why his family's miserable. They eat sugar, and that's
why he doesn't... Too much sugar. That's it. That's what it is. Too much sugar.
But, of course, this is where we meet who but George. George McFly.
Eating cereal.
Yeah.
In a diner.
We never get to see George's upbringing at home. Like, he's eating out a lot, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we see him doing laundry at some point in the film, but we never see, like, home life, no. But who goes to a diner in the morning before school and eats cereal? I always thought he was eating oatmeal, but this last time I was watching it, it looks kind of like cornflakes.
Yeah, he's eating like
corn. I was
always
wondering what the hell he's eating.
He's eating cornflakes or Wheaties or something. But
yeah.
When Biff shows up, it's the exact conversation they had in present day where he wants his homework done. And...
Hey, McFly. What do you think you're doing?
Biff.
Hey, I'm talking to you, McFly, you Irish bug.
Oh, hey, Biff. Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Yeah, you got my homework finished, McFly?
Well, actually, I figured since it wasn't due till Monday...
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think, McFly.
Think.
I gotta have time to recopy it. You realize what would happen if I hand in my homework in your handwriting? I'd get kicked out of school. You wouldn't want that to happen, would you? Would you?
Well, now, of course not.
No,
I wouldn't want that to happen.
And he's banned him from even going to Lou's. You know, what are you doing here? I thought they told you never to come in here.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, what is he? Like? Check this out. Dorko thinks he's going to drown.
What are you looking at, butthead?
Hey, Biff, get over this guy's life preserver. Dork thinks he's going to drown.
Yeah.
Because he's got the life vest on. One thing that I think is crazy, because we know who Billy Zane is now.
Yes.
What is Billy Zane doing hanging out with them?
Yeah, he's...
Does he fit with those guys?
No, he doesn't, because they look so dorky, and he looks like all dapper and
he's like
and
this classic,
handsome
kind of guy. He looks like he could be Errol Flynn or something standing there.
There's a great part where he's obviously not real big on getting poop dumped on him.
Uh-huh.
And whenever that scene goes down with the chase, I know I'm... You know what? I'll leave it. I'll leave it out until we get to it. Sorry.
Okay.
But he just looks totally out of place.
Yeah, totally. So when that scene happens with Biff and everything and they leave, Marty gets to see his dad for the first time and it's like shock. And Goldie... Goldie Wilson is
Goldie
there.
Goldie Wilson!
And he's like, why do you let them pick on you like that?
Say, what do you let those boys push you around like that for?
Well, they're bigger than me.
Stand tall, boy. Have some respect for yourself. Don't you know if you let people walk over you now, they'll be walking over you for the rest of your life.
You know, he's got a good...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's got sound logic.
He doesn't want to get the crap beat out of him.
Yeah.
And he goes, you can make something of yourself one day.
Look at me. You think I'm going to spend the rest of my life in this slop house?
Watch it, Goldie.
No, sir. I'm going to make something of myself. I'm going to night school. And one day, I'm going to be somebody.
That's right. He's going to be mayor.
Yeah, I'm going to... Mayor. Now, that's a good idea. I could run for mayor.
A colored mayor. That'll be the day.
You wait and see, Mr. Carruthers. I will be mayor. I'll be the most powerful man in Hill Valley. And I'm going to clean up this town.
Good. You can start by sweeping the floor.
Mayor! That guy's totally overacting in that scene, isn't he? Mayor!
Yeah, but it works. It's funny.
When Lou says, oh, that'll be the day, a colored mayor.
A colored mayor,
it's
yeah.
Like, whoa. That just doesn't fit anymore.
No, it doesn't.
But he goes to chase after George, and we see George has climbed up a tree. That's a great scene. He's got
George like slips out without him even realizing it. He's talking to Goldie.
And I love as he's running away, he goes, gling, gling, with his little bell.
Yeah, just a warning. You know, he's entering traffic.
But he's in the tree, and he's like,
he's a peeping Tom.
And then it's not until, you know, he falls in the street and then a car comes and he pushes him out of the way that you're like, oh, shit, this is exactly how he meets his mom.
One of these goddamn kids jumped in front of my car again.
Stella! Another one of these damn kids jumped in front of my car!
But I love the dad's outfit there. He's wearing the weird outfit, that coat. I wonder what that is.
Yeah, he's got like this full-length coat, weird hat.
He looks all bulky.
He does, he does.
But we get to meet Lorraine, Marty's mom.
Mm-hmm.
But what's good about that scene is he thinks he's home back in present day. Oh, he had a terrible
dream.
Mom, is that you?
You're there now. Just relax. You've been asleep for almost 9 hours now.
Had a horrible nightmare. Dreamed that I went back in time. It was terrible.
Well, safe and sound now, back in good old 1955.
1955? You're my mom.
My name is Lorraine.
Then we get to see his mom. Leah Thompson, by the way, always thought was hot.
Oh my God,
back
she's
in the 80s.
She's stunning in this scene. Stunning.
Yeah.
Just that like meek quality and just gorgeous.
Yeah, always loved her.
I was watching it again last night and just like, wow, she really is pretty.
One thing that they establish about in the movie, like, she's just not into boys. She's full on boy crazy.
Yeah,
like,
she's got some serious issues going on.
She wants
there.
To like she's begging her parents to let him spend the night.
Yeah, she doesn't want to like hold hands and like cuddle. I think she's full on wants it.
She's full on horn dog.
Yeah, she wants it. She doesn't know what she wants, but she wants it.
She seems very nympho in this. I mean, like, she can't be controlled kind of thing. It's kind of crazy. Like, she's
now, even the mom is like, Lorraine, are you up there? Like, they know, like, watch out, this girl's going to be trouble.
Yeah, she's like, oh my God, it's my mom. And she, like, put your pants back on. I love the, like, she took his pants off, you know, because she keeps calling him Calvin. Why do you keep calling me that?
I've never seen purple underwear before, Calvin.
Calvin, why do you keep calling me Calvin?
Well, that is your name, isn't it? Calvin Klein? It's written all over your underwear.
Calvin Klein, it's on your underwear. And she's never seen purple underwear before.
Oh, that's. I think that's what endeared her to him.
Yeah. When we get to meet her family, I love that the dad's like, hey, we can watch Jackie Gleason while we eat.
Oh, look at it roll. Now we can watch Jackie Gleason while we eat.
And, oh, yeah, I've seen this one. It's a rerun.
What's a rerun?
Hey, I've seen this one. This is a classic. This is where Ralph dresses up as a man from space.
What do you mean you've seen this? It's brand new.
Yeah, well, I saw it on a rerun.
What's a rerun?
You'll find out.
And again,
yeah,
it's Jason Hervey.
It's the big brother from
Wonder Years.
Wonder Years, yeah.
But I love the... Because earlier in the movie... In present day, we hear about Jailbird Joey. He
mm-hmm.
didn't make parole. Then we get to meet Joey when he's a baby. He goes, get used to these bars, kid.
And over there in the playpen is little baby Joey.
So you're my Uncle Joey. Better get used to these bars, kid.
Yes, Joey just loves being in his playpen.
He cries whenever we take him out, so we just leave him in there all the time.
He loves being jailed.
That's why he's institutionalized even as a baby.
Right. Oh, and did you notice who Lorraine's mom is?
No.
It's the mom from Gremlins.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Holy shit. Why have I never put that together? Probably because she's blonde in this.
I was just like, oh, it's a Gremlins mom. But one thing I love is when Marty asks where a certain street is.
Do you know where Riverside Drive is?
It's on the other end of town, a block past Maple, east end of town.
A block past Maple, that's John F. Kennedy Drive.
Who the hell is John F. Kennedy?
Who the hell is John F. Kennedy?
Yeah.
And just, you know, I wanted to make a note. I wrote here, why is Lorraine so horny?
I would really like to know that. What led to that?
But we get one of the a great scene here where Marty goes to Doc's,
yeah.
Doc Brown's house, and he's got that thing on his head. And he's like, don't say a word. And wait, Doc, I really got to talk to you. No. Just stay there. And
he puts that suction cup just right on his forehead.
And he goes, you're selling Saturday Evening Post.
Doc?
Don't say a word.
Doc.
I don't want to know your name. I don't want to know anything about you.
Listen, Doc.
Quiet.
Doc.
Don't
Doc,
tell me anything. Anything.
Doc,
quiet.
What the hell?
Quiet. I'm going to read your thoughts.
Let's see now. You
come here from a great distance?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't tell me. You want me to buy a subscription to the Saturday Evening Post?
No.
Not a word. Not a word. Not a word now. Quiet. Donations. You want me to make a donation to the Coast Guard Youth Auxiliary.
I love it. But I love how he goes, poof.
Doc, I'm from the future. I came here in a time machine that you invented. Now I need your help to get back to the year 1985.
He goes, okay, hotshot, who's the president? Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis?
I love that whole scene because he doesn't believe Marty. He thinks he's pulling a prank until he tells him, you know, it's like you told me.
Doc, the bruise in your head. I know how that happened. You told me the whole story. You were standing on your toilet and you were hanging a clock and you fell and you hit your head on the sink. And that's when he came up with the idea for the flux capacitor, which is what makes time travel possible.
And then he shows him the DeLorean and the flux capacitor. I love the flux capacitor.
After I fell off my toilet, I drew this.
Flux capacitor.
We don't know what it does, but
it's
awesome.
Yeah, but there's absolutely no explanation to how the flux capacitor works, but it doesn't matter because it's cool.
It makes time travel possible.
Flux capacitor fluxing.
But I love when he shows him the video. You remember he's got the video camera and he hooks it up and he's explaining everything and he's like...
It's a television studio.
When he goes, why are you wearing that radiation suit?
Never mind that.
Why, that's me. Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot.
Thank God I still got my hair! But what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Well, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
We have atomic wars.
Yeah, the nuclear fallout in the future.
And he goes, of course, the 1.21 gigawatts of power. That, of course, we always... This movie has so many lines that we know from just... It's in our lexicon. And one is, 1.21 gigawatts! We just know it, you know?
Yeah.
It's part of our life.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of
electricity. What did I just say?
Electrical, but I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott!
What the hell is a gigawatt?
The best line is when Marty goes, what the hell is a gigawatt?
No one knows. Apparently.
Because he's so upset, he just leaves. That's what I love, is Doc Brown just leaves. And he's like, the only way you're stuck here, Marty, the only way is with a bolt of lightning.
Lightning, yeah.
But we can never predict when lightning is going to strike. He goes, we do now.
Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night.
It's genius, isn't it?
It really is. It's simple. You know, there's no true way to exactly predict.
And
at what point in that minute was it struck?
And I had read different. I read different things where they were going to have him drive on a atomic testing range and stuff. And
yeah.
This was the most simple, and it was a good idea. It kept it home, kept it in Hill Valley. Yeah. It was perfect. It was just perfect the way they did
it. I think as they narrowed it down, as they broke it down, the script, like, well, that's just too big.
It's funny because I guess because so many people want to, you know, they interview you about your movie. They ask, you know, like, so what were some of the ideas that you didn't go with? And at that point, they should probably say, oh, I don't want to discuss those. It doesn't matter. But they do give all the fans that so we can talk about it later, you know?
It's fun. It's fun to speculate. You're glad that none of it actually
happened. These are awful ideas, you know?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, like, deleted scenes from the next film that you're glad were never put into the film.
Right.
Because it don't work well.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how many things you don't realize doesn't work until you shoot it, you know? Until you actually have it on film, then you're like, yeah, this doesn't work. But he delivers the line, we're going to send you...
We're sending you back to the future!
Okay, all right, Saturday's good, Saturday's good. I can spend a week in 1955, I can hang out, you can show me around.
That's what the title means, because when you first see the name Back to the Future, I don't know what it means.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell is that?
What does Back to the Future mean? I don't understand. That's because he's stuck in the past, he's going back to the future. Oh, okay, I get it. But he's like, you need to stay here, Marty, and not interact anything that will affect your future. You haven't done anything, have you?
You must not leave this house. You must not see anybody or talk to anybody. Anything you do could have serious repercussions on future events. Do you understand?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Marty, have you interacted with anybody else today besides me?
I might have sort of bumped into my parents.
Great Scott!
Oh.
Well, met my parents.
But we get to see poor, George at school getting kicked with the kick me sign, always the most clever of things in school, huh?
Yes, that's... And how has that persisted? How?
I don't know.
It's timeless. It's timeless torture.
Which one's your pop?
That's him.
Okay, you guys. Ha, 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 ha. Very funny. You guys are being real mature.
Maybe we were adopted.
Okay, real mature.
Jesus, didn't that guy ever have hair?
Shape up, man. You're a slacker. Do you want to be a slacker for the rest of your life?
But I get mad at Strickland there. He tears it off George's back, and he's like, you're a slacker. You know, why couldn't he... He's obviously a victim here. Stick up for him. But I guess he doesn't think of it. He's a weakling, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's Strickling. If you're not sticking up for yourself, or if you're totally unaware that you're being picked on, it's your own damn fault.
Yeah, you're a slacker.
Yeah, you're a slacker.
But that's the best line from Marty. He goes, Jesus, didn't that guy ever have hair? That's a great line.
It looks exactly the same. They did absolutely nothing with his makeup in the future or the past. He looks exactly the same.
Yeah. And I love, Doc Brown looks so out of place in the high school, doesn't he? And I love his, like, civilian clothes.
He looks out of place in the 50s. Like, his clothes, just it's all brown. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's just, it's
so...
dirty and just, he looks strange.
I always assumed Doc Brown had very rich parents who indulged him in his inventor fantasies.
Yeah.
And he got left a huge, you know, they died and he got left a huge, what do you call it? Inheritance.
Yeah, he's obviously never had to work a day in his life.
Right.
He just sits around and creates shit.
And invents things. Even when Marty meets him, you know, we see him, he's in a smoker's jacket, you know?
Yeah.
He's just chilling.
He's a man-child.
So his whole mission now in this part of the movie is to get George and Lorraine together because he screwed it up by jumping in front of the car. And, of course, that's where he's like,
"This is more serious than I thought. Apparently your mother is amorously infatuated with you instead of your father."
Whoa, wait a minute. Doc, are you trying to tell me that my mother has got the hots for me?
Precisely.
Whoa, this is heavy.
There's that word again, heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
What?
He's like, what?
And the fact that heavy actually took off, people actually started saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's fantastic. I love that.
Oh, this is heavy.
I still say it.
But
like,
I love
whenever something serious is happening and you want to bring levity to the situation, it's pretty heavy.
But I, you know, of course, I always love Great Scott.
Great Scott.
When George is writing his, I love that whole Crispin Glover vibe, how Marty sits down with him. He goes, "What are you doing, George?" He goes, "I'm writing stories, these science fiction stories with the people
coming down to Earth from other planets. Town. I didn't know you did anything creative. Well, let me read some." "Oh, no. I never let anybody read my stories." "Why not?" "Well, what if they didn't like them? What if they told me I was no good? I guess that would be pretty hard for somebody to understand." No, not hard at all."
"You probably wouldn't understand." And I love the way Marty's just like, "No, I could totally understand."
"Yeah, I get it.
Like father, so like son, totally. Yeah. We're all afraid." And that whole scene, you know, he's like, "Well, you know, Lorraine really likes you." He goes,
"She told me to tell you that she wants you to ask her to the Enchantment Under the Sea dance."
"Really?"
"Oh, yeah. All you got to do is go over there and ask her."
"What, right here, right now in the cafeteria? What if she said no? I don't know if I could take that kind of a rejection. Besides, I think she'd rather go with somebody else. Who? Biff."
"Yep."
I want to bring this up. This is a family comedy movie, sci-fi comedy, right? Biff is a rapist.
Yes,
am I?
He is a full-on, not even just like date rapist where you drug the girl and take her against her will. He is just full-on, "Let me put my hand between your legs, rapist."
Right. He's like grabbing, pulling up skirts and shit in front of people. Nothing. No one does anything.
No one does anything.
"It.
You want it. You know you want it. You know you want me to give it to you.
Shut your filthy mouth. I'm not that kind of girl."
"Oh, well, maybe you are and you just don't know it yet.
Get your meat hooks off of me."
"You heard her. She said get your meat hooks off. Please."
It's like, "Oh, that's Biff. He's just raping."
He's like going, like reaching around, grabbing her. She's like, "Get your meat hooks off of me." And he's like getting really forceful and scary.
"Okay, baby."
This is like shit you call the police for.
Yeah, exactly. He should be in jail.
But luckily, Marty's there to defend her, which makes it worse because she just falls in love with him more each time. Because there's that great moment where he stands up to Biff, and Biff's like, "I'm going to let you off with a warning right now. You're the new kid." And I guess no one notices that Marty's not even enrolled in school, dude.
Yeah, he's just there.
But I love that whole bit where he's like, George, he goes,
"George! Why do you keep following me around? Look, George, I'm telling you, George, if you do not ask Lorraine to that dance, I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life."
"But I can't go to the dance. I'll miss my favorite television program, Science Fiction Theater."
"Yeah, but George, Lorraine wants to go with you. Give her a break."
"Look, I'm just not ready to ask Lorraine out to the dance. And not you, nor anybody else on this planet, is going to make me change my mind.
not you or anyone on planet Earth can convince me. And I love that setup there. Did you ever notice? I don't think I did as a kid, but his cassette he puts in is Edward Van Halen. It's not.
Oh,
just,
is it? It just says Eddie Van Halen?
Yeah, it says Van Halen pretty big, but above it it says Edward Van or Edward Van Halen.
Yeah, I never noticed that. I knew it was Van Halen. I just didn't know.
And I was always wondering, like, why does he have an Edward Van Halen cassette? Like, did that even get released? But then I was like, oh, he's a guitarist. He probably is inspired by Eddie Van Halen. Carries around a cassette, but I don't know.
He keeps it. He like he reminds himself, like I could be Edward Van Halen,
right? And then we get the funny bit where he's in the radiation suit and he's like,
"Who are you?"
Silence, Earthling. My name is Darth Vader. I am an extraterrestrial from the planet Vulcan.
So, see what they did there? They brought Star Wars and Star Trek together. Isn't that great?
Yes, they did. It's a love fest.
But I love later on, you know, he's like, Marty, Marty! He's like totally convinced.
Marty! Marty! Hey, George, buddy, you were in school. What have you been doing all day?
I overslept. Look, I need your help. I have to ask Lorraine out, but I don't know how to do it.
All right, okay, listen, keep your pants on. She's over in the cafe. God, honey.
What made you change your mind, George?
Last night, Darth Vader came down from planet Vulcan and told me that if I didn't take Lorraine out, that he'd melt my brain.
Yeah, well, let's just keep this brain-melting stuff to ourselves, okay?
Oh, yeah.
All right, okay.
I think we should keep that to ourselves, George. But I love his moment of, like, where he's, where George is, brave, he goes,
Lou, give me a milk. Chocolate.
Yeah.
And then we have one of the best scenes ever where he's like, I am your density.
Lorraine, my density has brought me to you.
What?
Oh, what I meant to say.
Wait a minute. Don't I know you from somewhere?
Yes. Yes. I'm George. George McFly. I'm your density. I mean, your destiny.
But, you know, Lorraine is really nice in that scene. She doesn't blow him off. She's just like, I'm sorry, what? And he goes, I am your destiny. She lets him get it all out, and then
she obviously kind of likes him. She, you know, at this point she's so, you know, man hungry that she would probably take him.
Yeah, totally. She's a horn dog out of control, and that's what happened. Like, probably what happened when in the original timeline, her dad hit him and brought him home. She probably jumped his bones back then.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure she did while he was unconscious.
He was defenseless.
Yeah, she raped him like Biff.
Yeah, no kidding.
She's maybe that's where she gets it. Like, she's always the object of, like, you know, like sexual violence from Biff. Maybe, you know, she thinks that's how you get guys.
You just grab them, you know?
Yeah, you just grab them.
But then we
pants off and look at their purple underwear.
Biff totally ruins the scene, you know, with George and Lorraine, where he's like,
and you're fly! I thought I told you never to come in here. Well, it's going to cost you. How much money you got on you?
Well, how much you want, Biff?
All right, punk. Now I'm
gonna...
Whoa,
Biff. What's that?
But one thing, he's like saying, you're going to have to pay how much money you got on you in front of everybody. So he just like blindly robs the dude in front of everyone. No one gives a shit.
It's Biff.
Now, this scene in the diner when Marty goes, hey, Biff, look over there, and he punches him, and it's Eric Stoltz's hand that punches him, I guess.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. But, hey, it could be. You don't ever know. We have the best chase scene ever on the first ever skateboard, right?
First ever.
I love that scene where you hear a guy go, "It's a board with wheels."
With wheels. Yeah.
What's that thing he's on?
It's a board with wheels.
An absolute dream.
And it shows how awesome Marty is doing all these things, getting away.
Well, he's heroic. He's courageous and heroic, but he's also neurotic. Like, it's what George McFly could be.
Right. Yeah, totally. And there's that scene where they've got him against a bumper and Biff goes, "I'm going to ram him." He's going to kill Marty in that scene.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He's a raping murderer.
Because if he, say Marty got stuck there, he totally would have impaled him on that manure truck. He would be dead.
He would have crushed him. He would have split him in half.
So he's like, "I'm going to ram him." And then Marty's like, "Huh?" And he like just jumps over it easily and they crash into the manure.
Yeah, now this is the scene I was talking about earlier with Billy Zane. If you watch it, he could not get further away from that manure when that car is going into the side. Uh-huh. Like, he's actually... He kind of dives outward.
Oh,
and then
the actor?
Goes in.
You mean just like the actor Billy Zane in the scene?
Yeah, the actor Billy Zane, yeah.
He's like, "I've had enough of this shit."
Yeah, he's like, I don't care if this is an actual shit. I don't want any of it on my perfectly coiffed hair. He like dives out and then in. He's so reluctant.
I can't get
you
over this.
You would think he would be the leader.
Right, because he's
Biff would be the Mongo character, the one, like the muscle, just the guy in the background.
Right. Oh, and another thing, when he's going to ram Marty, they're like throwing bottles and shit, like glass bottles at him.
Yeah, they are trying to kill him.
They're trying to kill Marty. They're a band of rapists and murderers.
Yes. They're terrible, terrible human beings. And it's the 50s, you know, rapists, murderers. It's pretty common.
Yeah. Let's say
take what you want. Kill who you want. It was a pretty rough time.
And then when Marty gets back to... First he gives the kid his skateboard back.
Thanks a lot, kid.
Mm-hmm. But when he goes back to the lab...
And this scene is made all the better by part two. And just seeing how that develops. You know, you go like, "Oh, I've seen this before, but I love to see how it originally was."
Right. Where Doc is watching the video. You know, he's like, "They found us, Marty. You know, get out of here." And there's obviously some kind of danger happening, and he keeps rewinding it. He's like, "Talk about that night.
Doc?
Oh, hi, Marty. I didn't hear you come in. Fascinating device. It's... video unit.
Listen, Doc. You know, there's something I haven't told you about the night we made that.
Please, Marty, don't tell me. No man should know too much about his own destiny.
You don't understand.
I do understand. If I know too much about my own future, I can endanger my own existence. Just as you've endangered yours.
You're right.
What I love about the scene, the line where he shows him the model of Hill Valley, and he goes,
"Please excuse the crudity of this model. I didn't have time to build it to scale or to paint it."
That's good.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
It's this perfectly scale model.
Right. So he's, you know, they
and again,
do that
another
whole...
thing that happens in each film.
Yes.
Each film has that scale model.
Yeah, where it always gets progressively, like...
It's overly detailed.
Yeah, more elaborate. And every time it's like a disaster, where it's like, you're not instilling me with the most confidence here.
Well, my favorite... This is, honestly, this scene has my biggest laugh of the entire movie. When the car, you know, they do the thing and the car hits and then it runs off the table and it's run into the garage and there's this gigantic can of oily rag.
Yeah.
Release.
just there.
Huge and fire hazard.
Yeah, it just runs right into it, and the reaction that Christopher Lloyd does, that
yeah,
like, I laugh my ass off every time.
He does two of those in the movie. That's the first one where he's like, oh. And then later on, I love it on the clock tower when he goes, oh. That's like my favorite one. Oh. It's just like, come on.
so over the top. Just great. I don't know how anybody kept a straight face on the set during that. I would have loved to have been there or seen the behind the scenes.
Oh, I know. Basically, Lorraine shows up and she asks Marty to the dance.
It's your mom. She's tracked it down. Let's cover the timer.
And again, another facial reaction from Christopher Lloyd where he walks behind her and gives Marty this look like, what the hell is happening? it's hilarious reaction.
He's leaning over on the car and he's kind of looking at him like, holy.
You are an asshole. Just like, what are you doing?
But I love when, so Marty comes up with the idea for George to intervene. He's going to be a jerk to Lorraine, and then George gets to defend her.
I still don't understand. How am I supposed to go to the dance with her if she's already going to the dance with you?
Because, George, she wants to go with you. She just doesn't know it yet. That's why we got to show her that you, George McFly, are a fighter. You're somebody who's going to stand up for yourself, somebody who's going to protect her.
Yeah, but I've never picked a fight in my entire life.
Look, you're not going to be picking a fight, Dad. Daddy-o. You're coming to a rescue, right? Okay, let's go over the plan again. 8:55, where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at the dance.
Right, and where am I going to be?
You're going to be in the car with her.
Right, okay, so right around 9 o'clock, she's going to get very angry with me.
Why is she going to get angry with you?
And he's like, well, what are you going to do? And he goes, well, George, I'm going to do what...
George, nice girls get angry when guys take advantage of them.
Oh, you mean you're going to go touch her on her...
No, George, look... It's just an act, right?
You're going to touch her in her place.
You're going to go and touch her, and he's holding that bra on his hand. And Morty has to walk over and take it out of his hands. And he goes, I want you to say, you're lying, George. What's your line?
You're lying, George.
Hey, you, get your damn hands off her. You really think I ought to swear?
Yes, definitely. God damn it, George, swear. Okay.
But I love where he's like, do you really think I should swear? God damn it,
George, yes, swear.
And that's where he gives the line to George, like, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
And you and Lorraine live happily ever after.
Oh, you make it sound so easy. I wish I wasn't so scared.
George, there's nothing to be scared of. All it takes is a little self-confidence. You know... If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
And this is what I always wonder watching the movie. When they're back in the future and George's dad tells Marty, how do they not remember Marty?
How did they not go, holy shit, that was our son?
Holy shit, our son is Calvin Klein. It's Marty from when we were... Do you remember him, Lorraine? Yeah, I do. I would totally have the hots for him.
Yeah, how does that not start a whole nother story?
I don't know. How would they not...
I would love to see that story where the parents finally realize that Marty was Marty.
Because
how does his dad not go, son, you did this for me?
When I was a kid, I wondered, maybe you just don't remember when you're older. Okay, now I'm 41 years old. You remember shit. Yeah.
I remember minutia from high school that I shouldn't. You know, you're going to remember the biggest moment of your life.
You remember people you went to dances with, you know?
Yeah.
Lorraine went to the dance with Marty. You remember fights you got in?
His purple underwear?
Yeah.
You're going to remember these things.
You'd remember when your dad
hit... When you wash your son's purple underwear, do you not go, Calvin Klein, purple underwear?
Also... Wouldn't you remember, if your dad ever hit a kid with a car, you would remember it your whole life. Come on.
Yeah.
So there's a little kind of license you take there. But maybe George does remember. He does write that book. He writes a book and stuff. But remember in the book cover? In the future?
The radiation suit.
Yeah. Brought them together. So... But one thing I love is the scene, you know, after he convinces George and they got the plan in motion, Doc and Marty have a conversation together where he tells him that, you know, you've really brought meaning to my life, Marty.
Say, you know, Marty, I'm going to be very sad to see you go. You've really made a difference in my life. You've given me something to shoot for. Just knowing that I'm going to be around to see 1985, that I'm going to succeed in this, that I'm going to have a chance to travel through time. It's going to be really hard waiting 30 years before I can talk to you about everything that's happened in the past few days. I'm really going to miss you, Marty.
And at this point in the movie, we've seen a movie, we're watching it for the first time, we think Doc is dead. He's been killed. He never gets to travel through time. He's dead, yeah. Right? So yeah. You feel really bad. And so Marty feels so bad. And by the way, at this point in the movie, I can never believe the movie's almost over at this point.
I know. Isn't it? The movie moves at such a click that the pacing is astounding.
Yeah, it's just like all of a sudden, okay, he's ready for the dance, you know? Yeah. And it's like, holy shit, this...
Yeah, because I thought exactly that same thing last night because, you know, him and Lorraine are in the car, and I'm just like, wow, this is almost over.
So he writes him the letter telling him that... one thing I love is he goes, you will be gunned down by terrorists.
Dear Dr. Brown, on the night that I go back in time, you will be... shot by terrorists. Please take whatever precautions are necessary to prevent this terrible disaster. Your friend, Marty.
Well, he doesn't want to be subtle about it.
But could you imagine reading that in the 50s? Like, he puts a letter together and go, what the hell are terrorists?
Terrorists? What? Are they beatniks?
This must be...
Is it Jack Kerouac?
Post-atomic apocalypse terrorists.
Oh, my God, you're right. Yeah, wow.
Wouldn't your imagination run wild?
It would be like Road Warrior.
You know, knowing me, I would stress about
you're
that for the rest of my...
gunned down by Lord Humongous.
If I knew, like someone says, Jason, when you're 40 years old, you'll be gunned down by terrorists, I would think about it a lot.
Yeah, I would too. And obviously, he couldn't let it go because he saved the letter after ripping it up.
Right. You know, he wants to give Doc the letter, and he goes, no, I can't know this, or whatever, and he tears it up, or whatever. Or no, wait, he tears it up later, but he goes, I can't know anything about this, forget it. But when I love when the cop goes, what do you got here?
Evening, Dr. Brown. What's with the wire?
Oh, just a little weather experiment.
What you got under here?
Don't touch that! Some new specialized weather sensing equipment.
You got a permit for that?
Of course I do.
You got a permit for that?
Of course I do.
Of course. Like, I bet you he takes the cop out back, hits him on the back of the head with a wrench, and hides him. And like,
well, I always
it doesn't seem like he got a permit for something that shouldn't exist.
He's totally just bribing him there, isn't he? He opens his wallet.
Yeah, I assume he does. Yeah.
He gives him a couple of $100, probably maybe a 50. I don't know. What in 1955, probably a couple
50
of 20s.
$50 is probably like. $200 back then?
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, he probably just gives him a fitty.
One thing I think is funny at the dance, because the plan is for George at a certain time to walk out to the car, but they show him chilling at the dance by himself for a while.
Yeah, he's not drinking.
He's dancing and stuff. Crispin Glover is a genius in this movie, I think. He's so great.
Yeah, just that awkward alone dance.
Yeah.
Marvin
he's drinking
Barry.
Some punch. One thing I wanted to know this, because I didn't think about this before until I read it, that maybe George has some liquid courage in him because the spike was punched. And Back to the Future...
Wait. Spike was punched?
The punch was spiked. In Back to the Future 2, they show Biff spiking the punch.
Yes.
But in Back to the Future... he's waiting, and he's drinking a lot of punch. He's dancing. Maybe he had some liquid courage in him.
He's drunk.
Yeah.
He's drunk.
Which is fantastic. But we have a great moment here with Marty and his mom where she drinks.
And smokes.
I love that whole scene. He goes,
do you mind if we park for a while?
That's a great idea. I'd love to park.
Huh.
Marty, I'm almost 18 years old. It's not like I've never parked before.
What?
Marty, you seem so nervous. Is something wrong?
No. Lorraine, what are you doing?
I swiped it from the old lady's liquor cabinet.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't drink.
Why not?
Because you might regret it later in life.
Don't be such a square. Everybody who's anybody drinks.
Jesus, you smoke too?
Marty, you're beginning to sound just like my mother.
And I love where he turns around and she's taking her coat off, showing cleavage, and he's just like, oh! That scene is great. Okay, if we can just cut to the... when he's kind of having this moment with his mom, and then she wants... she's going to jump Marty's bones. She wants it. She's going to... whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's had sex before, but she says
I don't think... she's just eager to know what it is.
Well, remember, she said that she's been... it's not like this is the first time I've been in a car, Marty.
Oh, that's true.
So she might just be a slut.
She's well acquainted with the back seat.
Right. So when she goes to kiss him, that scene where she pulls back, and she's like...
this is all wrong. I don't know what it is. But when I kiss you, it's like I'm kissing my brother. I guess that doesn't make any sense, does it?
Believe me, it makes perfect sense.
When Biff shows up and he's like, well, what do we have here? And he like sees down her shirt and he's like...
you caused $300 damage to my car, you son of a bitch. I'm going to take it out of your ass.
Hold him.
Let him go, Biff. You're drunk.
Well, looky what we have here. No. Stay right here with me.
Come on, Lorraine. Come
on. Let me go.
Leave her alone, you bastard. You got to take him in back, all right? I'll be right there. Come on. Come on. Go on, this ain't no peep show.
I think I'm gonna stay here and rape Lorraine, you guys. You go beat up,
Go stuff Marty in a trunk while I rape this defenseless woman.
Because she's like, no, against her will, and he's like, this ain't no peep show. Is he going to rape her?
Is he? I think that George walks in on them mid-rape.
Like, did this happen in the lot in the 50s? What's going on here?
Did it happen a lot in the 50s? 50s, you know, a lot of children born in the 50s were children of rape.
Okay, because you think about this movie is in the 50s. Biff is just this common bully at first, but now we've determined he's willing to murder and rape someone.
He's a murdering rapist thug.
Right. So why do you have him washing your car in present day? Cut him out of your life forever, right?
He should be in prison. They should go to the police and say he was raping her whenever I came to her defense. And everyone saw it.
Thomas Wilson has that Biff voice perfect. He goes, looky what we have here.
You know?
That voice. And we have the uncomfortable moment where they throw Marty in a trunk and he's like,
the hell are you doing in my car?
Hey, beat it, spook. This don't concern you.
Who you calling spook, Peckerwood?
Hey, listen, guys. Look, I don't want to mess with no reefer addicts, okay?
Get home to your mama, boy.
Yeah, who you calling spook, Peckerwood?
Because we don't want any reefer addicts.
Yeah, we don't want to mess with no reefer addicts. And I always assume they go and run and beat the shit out of them, right?
I would hope so. And they deserve it.
Those guys chased after them. Marvin Berry did it, but the other guys did. Mm-hmm. I guess they give up and they come back. But there's a part in Back to the Future 2 where they see Marty in a... he's in a disguise and they chase after him. And then they wait on stage as other Marty is playing Johnny B. Goode. And they're waiting there with sticks and stuff. Those black guys know you and they wanted to kick your ass. That part always bothers me. Because it's minutes later, right?
Yeah, it is.
So they would totally get their asses kicked and they wouldn't be waiting there, I think.
No. They would be in a heap behind the auditorium.
They go, oh shit, it's those guys, and they go hide, wouldn't they?
It's those reefer heads again.
It's those reefer addicts, man. Okay, but now we cut to the scene where George goes to the car because he thinks Marty's in there, and it's Biff. And don't you love his body language there? He's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Hey, you, get your damn hands off.
Oh, I think you got the wrong car, McFly.
George, help me, please.
Just turn around, McFly, and walk away. Are you deaf, McFly? Close the door and beat it.
No, Biff. You leave her alone.
All right, McFly. You're asking for it. And now you're going to get it.
Biff, stop it! He'll break his arm!
Biff's scary in this scene because...
He is.
George, I think you want to leave. You made a mistake. I forget what he says, but he's like basically giving the opportunity to forget what he sees and just go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I love George there. He's like, I can't do that, Biff. But he's, hey, you, get your damn hands off her. But that whole I love George's journey in this of like weakling to know he's had enough of this shit, you know?
Yeah, the way he goes for like a body punch. Biff grabs his arm, twists him. He's like pathetic. He got Lorraine yelling, help, let him go, you're going to break his arm. And he just mans up.
Are you okay? That guy.
That's George McFly.
That's George McFly?
Wham! Just
I love
knocks the shit out of Biff.
Don't you love that spin punch he does?
Yep.
You know, he basically, you know, just does a
spin, slams against the car, and goes flat on his back.
And I love how immediately everyone's in the parking like, whoa, who was that? Who did you see who that was? That's George McFly. And I love later on that girl, it's like, have you thought about running for a student council president? And like yeah. His whole life is turning around.
Yeah, everybody's like, wow, somebody actually stood up to the raping murderer.
But I guess now we have to deal with the other guy. That's what's funny is because that moment in there, but then when they get in the dance, the redheaded guy, he's like,
yeah, that guy.
George, aren't you going to kiss me?
I don't know.
Scram, McFly. Cutting in.
Like, did he not just see that George McFly laid out Biff Tannen?
Yeah, he's like, that weird laugh. He's doing.
Oh.
It's like, is everyone lit at this dance or what?
Yeah, well, the punch is spiked.
That's true. The punch is spiked. The spike is punched.
The spike is punched.
Oh, and that's one of my favorite moments while all this is happening is, do they cut to Doc going, doing the dun-dun-dun, damn? Or is that later on?
I think that's later on because the storm is just starting now.
Oh, okay, Marty, when he sees... Okay, we haven't even brought up this, the picture of him and his brother and sister that's fading. Mm-hmm. He sees his brother's almost completely gone. I think all you see is feet. And yeah. He's like, okay, they're back to... My parents are back together, I guess, but nothing has changed in the picture. So he tells them, Marvin Berry.
Hey, guys, you gotta get back in there and finish the dance.
Hey, man, look at Marvin's hand. He can't play with his hand like that, and we can't play without him.
Yeah, well, look, Marvin, you gotta play. See, that's where they kiss for the first time on the dance floor, and if there's no music, they can't dance. If they can't dance, they can't kiss. If they can't kiss, they can't fall in love, and I'm history.
Hey, man, the dance is over. Unless you know somebody else that can play the guitar.
I love how he tells this guy, you know, so they can fall in love and they kiss and everything. And he's like, there ain't no more show.
The dance is over.
The dance is over. And then he's like, oh, I can play guitar. And it's
Earth Angel. Yep.
But one of my favorite parts of the movie, this is probably one of it, with Alan Silvestri's score, where the, you know, the... nerdy redhead guy kind of grabs Lorraine, and then that scary music starts playing, that zzzz, mm-hmm. And may I just say that I forgive Back to the Future for a lot of things, but the effects of Marty looking at a see-through hand.
Oh, the mat. You can see the black mat around his hand.
It's
and all
always
that.
Been pretty bad, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's even in the 80s it was bad.
Yeah, even in the 80s it wasn't good. May I say that I think the effects are better than the first Back to the Future than they are in the second one.
They are. They absolutely are. I think they tried to do too much.
I just think that
technology in the second one.
But also, if you look at like when principal photography started and when it finished, I don't think they had time to perfect anything in Back to the Future 2.
No.
I think they were lucky in Back to the Future 3 that most of it was in the Old West, so they didn't have to worry about a lot of crazy...
There was a lot of stuff that they didn't have to worry about in that one.
Right, but
All they had to worry about in that one was a flying train.
Yeah. But probably one of the worst effects in Back to the Future 3 is, even though it works for the movie, okay, but it doesn't look good, it's when Doc is holding Mary Steenburgen on the hoverboard.
Yes.
doesn't look good.
And then they kind of float away.
Yeah. I get what they were going for there, and that's fine, but George pushes Flames away, the Carrot Top kid.
Excuse me.
And he kisses her, and then Marty's back. He's...
Woo-hoo! He just pops right up.
And all the guys like, come on, man. We gotta do something that really cooks.
Come on, man. Let's do something that really cooks.
All right. This is an oldie. But, it's an oldie where I come from. All right, guys, listen to some blues riff and B. Watch me for the changes and try and keep up, okay?
Try to keep up. When you first saw this, were you like, oh, he's totally going to play a Huey Lewis song right here?
That would have been awesome. He's going to play I Want a New Drug.
Oh, man, this is going to be awesome. Do you got a guy who plays sax here?
It's essential.
Okay, when you watch this scene now where he's playing Johnny B. Good, do you picture the other Marty climbing up on stage towards the sandbags, or do you just forget
about
that?
No, I don't. I actually put it out of my head, crawling across the top of the stage.
Yeah. There's some parts of me when I watch Back to the Future 2 where I wish they didn't go back to 1955.
Yeah.
But I guess it's okay. The movie exists or whatever. There's nothing you can do about it, but... This movie stands fine on its own, honestly.
It does. If there was never another one, it would have been fine.
Yeah, totally.
Because it works so well, and then that open-ended ending, just like leaves so much up to the imagination. Can you imagine the amount of fan fiction there would be on the internet right now for it?
Why, no. Well, think about this. Like, George just knocked out Biff in front of everybody. He's going to wake up feeling like a loser and just go home. But instead, we know that he has his sports almanac, and he goes driving in the car, and then Marty goes after him, and he goes and tries to kill Marty some more. It's just none of that happens. Come on.
Yeah, it gets very complicated.
Yeah, I'd rather he just go home feeling like a loser, and he doesn't ever pick on George again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it right now. Like, in Back to the Future 2, he's still a cold-blooded killer wanting to kill Marty.
Yeah,
why would he wake up the next day not
Back
wanting...
Back to the Future 2 is The Empire Strikes Back. I mean, it is
right.
It is dark, dark, dark.
Well, and he becomes this emasculated pussy who washes cars and waxes them.
He has his own... It's his own company.
Right.
It's Biff's auto detailing or whatever. So, I mean, he made something of himself. But he's getting paid to do it.
This Biff here, I would think, would the next day go and get revenge on George. He wouldn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He would kill him. Just like in the second film, he shoots George. You know, it's not said, but it's.
Yeah, he says that this is the gun I used to kill your father or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just hard to see. It makes it more difficult when you have sequels.
It does. It complicates everything.
Right. But then, the part where Marty's playing Johnny B. Goode, I love the guy, goes, "Hey, Chuck, it's your cousin Marvin. Marvin Berry?"
Chuck, it's Marvin. Your cousin Marvin Berry? You know that new sound you're looking for? Well, listen to this.
It's like so telegraphed.
We need to make this as obvious as possible.
Remember, you were looking for a new sound?
New sound, yes. And he even does the Chuck Berry, what do they call that?
The duck walk?
The duck walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then I love Lorraine's like,
"Marty, that was very interesting music."
She almost sounds like she does as a mom.
That was a just horrible guitar riff whenever he starts losing it. And
guess you guys aren't ready for that yet. But your kids are gonna love it.
Going all over the floor and doing the Angus Young kick and knocking over the amp. It was like, what in the hell?
My favorite part of that.
You guys, I guess you aren't ready for that yet, but your kids are gonna love it. No, really, they're not.
Well, my favorite part of that is Marvin Berry looking at his guitar like he did something to it. Like
that's the other thing that always bothered me in the movie was in the opening. We're going all the way back to the beginning now. What the hell is with that ukulele guitar that he has at the very beginning of the movie when he plugs it into the gigantic amp? The thing is tiny.
I never noticed,
honestly. It's not even like a full guitar. It's like this tiny little guitar with this long neck. It drives me nuts.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and look. I don't think I've ever noticed.
It's not a full-size guitar. It's like a mini guitar.
Oh, and another thing in that scene, I love how Strickland has his ears covered.
Yeah, he's like...
he's looking at him angry. Yeah. Like,
what the hell was that? I don't like ears. That.
Oh, and then, you know, when Marty's doing that, they cut to the dog going, dun, 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 damn.
Where is that kid? Damn.
I love it. He's got watches all over his wrists. So then we have Marty. He's not going back in that zoot suit. And he's going to get in the car. But remember, he goes, "You should have seen it. My old man laid out Biff."
What? The old man really came through. It worked. What? He laid out Biff in one punch. I didn't know he had an enemy. He's never served to Biff in his life.
Never.
No, why? What's the matter?
He goes, "You say never stood up to him? Never mind."
it doesn't matter.
So now we get, you know, we're like, what could he mean there? Interesting, because we obviously know, even as a kid, I think we knew he changed something in that's going to affect the future. But, they have that whole spiel. One thing that's funny is this whole scene, you know, where they've got to hurry because the lightning storm's coming. And he goes, "What's this?" And he has the envelope, the message that, and he goes, "I told you, it'll affect my future." That whole scene, I always picture a fan blowing on them. And Robert Zemeckis says, "Yell as loud as you can." Because in this scene, they're yelling at each other, you know.
What's the meaning of this?
My find out in 30 years.
It's about the future, isn't it? It's information
Wait a
about
minute.
The future. I warn you about this, kid. The consequences can be disastrous.
Doc, that's a risk you're going to have to take. Your life depends on it.
No! I refuse to accept the responsibility.
In that case, I'll tell you straight out.
God.
Then lightning strikes that tree and the thing falls down. This whole sequence, even I don't care how many times I've seen it, I still get tense.
I'm totally tense during the entire thing.
I'm just like hurry.
Like they couldn't have paced it or cut it any better because it drives me nuts each time. As a kid, I had a hard time watching it. Like,
yeah,
I knew
you're just
gonna
it really
it
is
back,
on the edge of your seat moment.
Yeah,
and I love like. When he says, you know, even when the doc climbs up on the tower, mm-hmm. he's like,
I have to tell you about the future!
Like, he's not giving up. And then he's like, there's
he
no time! So he goes and he gets in the car and he's like, oh, shit, and he drives away. And he's like, wait, I got a time machine! The first thing I think is like, oh, shit, please don't fuck with anything, you know, just stick
don't
to
touch the time, sir.
Yeah, stick with the plan, please! But I love that part where he goes, flux capacitor fluxing like it's like whatever
you know the fluxingness.
I got all the time I want. I got a time machine. I can just go back early and warn him. Okay, 10 minutes ought to do it. Okay, time circuits on, flux capacitor fluxing, engine running. All right. No, come on.
But I always love, like, I refuse to accept the responsibility. I've got to tell you straight out, Doc. And they're just yelling. Just stop yelling.
We can hear you fine.
But we were talking about this earlier, two of Doc's best moments. One was the oily rags catching a fire, and this one where he's yanking on the wire, and then he goes, clink, and it pulls off, and he goes... love that scene. It cracks me up no matter how many times I see it. Yeah, this horror in his eyes. And
everything is going wrong in that moment.
What's funny is, you know...
Like, they thought... Did he honestly think that this massive storm with a huge lightning strike was going to be easy?
I know. And then when...
Let's just string cables all over the place.
I love Marty. He's in the car, and the car dies on him. And he's like, no. You know when he finally gets the car started by banging his head on the steering wheel?
Yeah.
I love when he's hauling ass. You know, he keeps shifting. And don't you love the sound of the DeLorean? That
yeah, it's got that electric sound to it.
Yeah, it just sounds
like
awesome.
Something else going on there, like maybe it's all the time circuits and everything, or, you know, I don't know what it is, but whoever did the sound design for that is awesome, because it's the same way in the parking lot at the beginning during that chase.
Right.
It's just that whirring.
That's one thing is, I know a lot of people who love Back to the Future. Hell, even Ernie Klein, they became obsessed with DeLoreans and they wanted one. I never actually wanted one, but I think if it did make that sound, I'd probably want one.
But, you know, I had, I can say it because none of my family ever listens to the show. We had the relatives that were like the snobby relatives, the rich, you know, kind of they like to present a front kind of.
Uh-huh.
And one of them had a DeLorean.
Oh, really?
This was shortly after the film came out. So they, like, show up in a DeLorean at this family birthday party. And it was just like, yeah, look at my DeLorean. You know, and I sat in it and everything and thought it was really cool. But it was a piece of shit, honestly. I mean, it was really... And when I think back to it now, it was a piece of shit.
Yeah, because now they're doing, like, conversions or making them work better and stuff.
Yeah. This movie did more for John DeLorean... Even though there was nothing that John DeLorean could do after the trumped-up drug charges that he was totally innocent of.
Right.
You know, after that happened, you know, there was no recovering from it.
Yeah.
But this movie did a huge amount of making the DeLorean a popular car, even though it was...
Oh, yeah, totally. It put it on the map again. And
it really did. There's people that still want DeLoreans to this day because of this film. It's not because it was a good car.
Right.
It's because of Back to the Future.
That's right. The scene where, Marty is hauling ass to where the lightning's going to hit, I love that he looks over and nothing's connected yet, and he's like, "Dog, come on!" It's just like... Holy shit.
Again, how did Doc not get the shit shocked out of him?
Yeah.
When he finally makes that final connection and it hits and everything works. And, I know he's thrown back, but he should be dead.
Yeah, he's like he looks like the Wile E. Coyote, He's like
the Energizer Bunny. He just keeps going.
Right. And I love that scene where, when he goes through time, and I've always loved the way Doc is like, oh, he's like triumphant,
Yeah!
They kind of ruin that scene in the later movies, too, because, as soon as that's over, that the other Marty's going to come running up.
Yep. Yep.
But I don't think about that when I watch it.
No, I don't. When I'm watching the first one, I have, thoughts, of the future films, but still, can't help but love it on its own.
Yeah, put it out of mind,
Yeah.
But I love when Marty crashes into the movie theater, in the prison.
What is that guy named Red?
Yeah.
The drunk. He's
crazy drunk driver.
We have the Lone Pines joke now where Marty goes back to the mall. Lone Pine. Oh, one thing I can't forget about this. When he goes back to the present day and everything looks all dirty and shitty, he goes,
yes.
Oh, thank God. Home.
Yeah, thank God I'm back home in shitty Hill Valley.
Yeah.
Everything looks the same.
And that scene where, he arrives at the mall and he's too late and he sees Doc get shot down again, but then he hears himself and sees himself
jump. But only because the car stalls and he has to run there.
Yeah, the car stalls again, which I always wondered, is that a joke about DeLoreans also, that they didn't work that well?
Pieces of shit? Yeah.
Yeah. So we, he goes and sees Doc and he was too late again and Doc's dead. That is a horrifying look on Christopher Lloyd's face when he turns him over and he's got...
Oh my God, yeah.
Dead face. It's like, it's too late. But then he sits up and then he shows him the letter that he actually taped it all together. I love that it's all taped together. So he's been... It's like, when you think about it like that, he's been waiting all this time to tell Marty the truth, but he couldn't. He had to go through it, You would just think someone was insane. But now that he's gone through time and everything and he's there... He can show him the letter that he wrote him that he knew about, so he wore a vest. And don't you love bulletproof vests in movies? It never really... There's no real, recovery. You're fine.
Yeah, you're fine. There's no... That massive inertia has just stopped it all.
What about all that talk about screwing up future events? The space-time continuum?
Well, I figured. What the hell?
I mean, come on. I'm not nitpicky about movies at all, but when he drops Marty off at his house, and first of all, I'm always like, Doc, why don't you go home and sleep for the night and then travel through time tomorrow? Like, come on, take a break. But he's ready to go right now.
Well, you have to think he just got shot. He's probably running on adrenaline.
Right. He's ready
that's
to go.
The way I think about it.
But he jumps through time really fast, doesn't he, after he drives down the street?
Where does he end up going?
He's going
does
to the future.
Go directly into the future?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, he goes in the future, and Marty goes home, and he wakes up the next day, back in time, is playing on the radio, everything's happy.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic song, right?
Still.
Gotta
yeah,
get back great. In time. Okay. Well,
Power of Love, Back in Time, all that stuff.
Cool. And also, after reading the Cracked article, the terrorists crash in that photo hut. Can we assume they're dead, hopefully? Are the terrorists dead?
That's a really dangerous photo hut.
I was thinking it should at least have blown up, right? So we know they're
like
dead.
Yeah, like something should have happened. Like maybe the rocket-propelled grenade goes off and blows up the
inside the van. Yeah, that would have been cool. Yeah. Like he pulls the trigger
like whenever,
in the van.
Yeah, he like goes in like with the thing and it pulls the trigger and it just blows up the entire van.
Because the whole time you're wondering, when are these guys going to wake up and come after them with AKs, you know?
Yeah, exactly. They're going to get two more terrorists. So it's going to be four terrorists.
So one thing that Marty wakes up the next day, and I love the line where he walks in the living room. Everything, the decor is different. It's got more taste to it.
It's clean. Yeah, everything about it is nicer.
He sees his siblings, and he's like,
"What the hell is this?
Breakfast."
Breakfast?
Yeah.
Oh, he's arguing. He's basically telling her, "You know, I'm not your answering service."
Well, if Paul calls me, tell him I'm working at the boutique late tonight.
Linda, first of all, I'm not your answering service. Second of all, somebody named Greg or Craig called you just a little while ago.
Well, which one was it, Greg or Craig?
I don't know. I can't keep up with all of your boyfriends.
Hey.
Because she's got all these guys hitting on her now, I guess.
Because she's got self-confidence. Before she had no love life, now she's a slut.
And now his brother, he always wears a suit to the office. He doesn't work at Burger King anymore.
What, did you sleep in your clothes again last night? Yeah, what are you wearing, Dave?
Marty, I always wear a suit to the office.
He's the manager now.
He's successful?
Wears a suit to Burger King.
And then, you know, George and Lorraine come in, and they look nice and fit. They've been playing tennis. And he's spry. He's pinching his wife on the ass, you know?
Yes. There's still love there.
Mom, Dad,
Marty,
did you hit your head? You guys look great. Mom, you look so thin.
Well, thank you, Marty. George.
We see totally emasculated Biff.
Yes, but now Biff. I told you to take two coats.
Yeah, don't con me, Biff. Oh, sorry, Mr. McFly.
Now, Biff, I want to make sure that we get two coats of wax this time, not just one.
Just finishing up the second coat now.
Now, Biff, don't con me.
I'm sorry, Mr. McFly. I meant I was just starting on the second coat.
Yeah, Biff, what a character. Always try to get away with something.
I love that. And then he comes in instantly. He goes,
Mr. McFly! Mr. McFly, you just arrived. Oh, hi, Marty. I think it's your new book.
Oh, honey. Your first novel.
Like I've always told you, you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything.
It's his new book.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Match Made in Space?
Yeah, Match Made in Space. And he says to Marty, now... Marty, you can accomplish anything if you put your mind to it. And then, you know,
in that moment, there should have been the light bulb.
Yeah, like, wait a second. My son. And then a whole, like, and then the world just destroys itself, you know?
The paradox.
Yeah. You know, his mom, he doesn't mind him dating Jennifer anymore.
Oh, Marty, I almost forgot Jennifer Barker called. Oh, I sure like her, Marty. She is such a sweet girl. Isn't tonight the night of the big date?
And he goes out.
Lights her.
Okay, I want to ask you something about the 4x4 parking job in the garage. What is that?
Does he back it in?
Could it not fit? Is that why it's crooked?
Maybe.
Who backs into a garage like that?
Maybe it's just how they present it. Like, let's see more of the side.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Toyota wants a better shot of the car.
It's an awesome 4x4, man. But I'm just going to say, when Doc drops Marty off and he drives down the street, he instantly goes in time. He doesn't get up to 88. It always bothers me.
Yeah, there's no way he could have got up at that speed that fast.
Well, because the next day and he sees Jennifer and she goes, you act like you haven't seen me in a week. And he's like, I haven't. And
oh, you a sight for sore eyes. Let me look at you.
Marty, you're acting like you haven't seen me in a week.
I haven't.
Doc shows up.
Wearing the full-on crazy man.
Don't you love his outfit? And he kind of looks at Jennifer kind of like embarrassed, like,
Marty! You've got to come back with me!
Where?
Back to the future!
Wait a minute. What are you doing, Doc?
I need fuel. Go ahead. Quick, get in the car.
No, Doc. I just got here, okay? Jennifer's here. We're going to take the new truck for a spin.
Well, bring it along. This concerns her, too.
Wait a minute, Doc. Well, what are you talking about? What happens to us in the future? What, do we become assholes or something?
No, Marty. Both you and Jennifer turn out fine. It's your kids, Marty. Something has got to be done about your kids.
Okay, this has always bothered me.
And at some point between the she changes into Elizabeth Shue.
I know. What happened? Why is Doc so urgent? Marty, we have to go now. It's a time machine.
It's a time machine. The future. Yeah.
Why is there such a rush, Bill? But I know it's a movie and you have to make it urgent and like a cliffhanger. Maybe they didn't know a sequel would ever be made, truly. And It was just a fun way to end the movie. I think it was a fun way because...
Yeah, it absolutely was.
I mean, when he says, Doc, you don't have enough road to get up to 88. Even though the night before he got up to 88 in 2 seconds going down the street.
Yeah, no problem.
He goes,
hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
They show the DeLorean take off. Of course, you're like, awesome! Because it's cool.
Yeah.
And it flies
into the screen. It's fusion powered, hover converted.
Yes, and it's so cool when it flies right into the screen. The movie's over. Perfect ending. Over. Right.
Yep.
And it is a really cool ending, and I love it.
It is, and it ends on that song, "Back in Time," and it just
Everything, man. I thought Huey Lewis was so lame when I was a kid, but when I watched this movie, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm digging this song.
It works.
Yeah. I'm totally digging this.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, I bought Sports. I bought the album Sports after this movie.
It made Huey Lewis cool, right?
Yeah, it did.
I mean, kind of. Then you were like, wait, what was I thinking?
Then you realize that Huey Lewis is a dink.
But also, I want to say this. I thought that the makeup of old George and old Lorraine and old Biff were pretty good in the first movie.
Yeah, and they weren't bad at all.
In Back to the Future,
too. Lorraine's a little plasticky.
Yeah.
No, but you notice how well they did the whole, like the wide front pants and all that. They made her look old and frumpy.
Right.
Like, really well done.
In Back to the Future, too, I thought the makeup was terrible. It doesn't hold up at all. It looks bad and plasticky.
It was over the top. Like, the whole, you know, the back thing where he's upside down and the hair and the...
It really hurt the movie that they didn't have Crispin Glover, I think.
Yeah, oh my God, it did. It really did.
I don't know what was...
Because the guy that was doing the Crispin Glover part was just doing a Crispin Glover impression.
And I guess, like, Crispin Glover, I don't know if it was people or what, they wanted $1 million or something.
Yeah.
Which I'd say, just pay the dude.
Someone got in his head and was like, well, you deserve more.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And
then
made that
movie,
Crispin.
Like, David Letterman ordeal, and just... That was like... It was way too much for Crispin Glover.
You know, one thing that's funny when you're talking about Elizabeth Shue... I love Elizabeth Shue, and I think she's hot. And I think the girl, Jennifer, is cute, too, in the first movie. If you're going to replace her with Elizabeth Shue, just let Elizabeth Shue look like Elizabeth Shue. Don't give her the same hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it just looks silly, I thought.
I know that Melora Hardin, I think that's Steve Carell's wife, was actually cast as Jennifer for the second film at first.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but then they recast it because she was taller than Michael J. Fox.
Oh, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Because it's so... We know who Elizabeth Shue is, so when you see her, you're like, you don't buy it at all. You're like, oh, it's Elizabeth Shue now playing the girlfriend.
Yeah.
So why even...
Well, they completely reshoot the first, you know, the last scene of the first film just to reestablish that.
And one thing that's funny is I'd read that Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale kind of wish they hadn't ended with taking Jennifer because they kind of would have gone in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very beginning of the movie, they knock her unconscious. And he's like, I love Marty's line. He goes, what did you bring her for? Mm-hmm. You know? But the whole thing that I'm not nitpicking Back to the Future. I love it. But the urgency thing drives me nuts because it's time travel. There's nothing urgent about it. He could stop and explain everything to Marty right now, but it doesn't make an exciting movie that way. So I understand.
Yeah.
But also it's the same same thing where you think, well, why isn't everything so urgent?
Yeah.
But I do... I'm going to say out of the three movies, I do love Back to the Future the most.
Yeah, easily.
And I enjoy the third one. It's fine.
Oh, I totally enjoy the third one because it defies a lot of the convention that was in the first and the second one. Because it's a totally different environment.
Right.
And there's just...
And it's
fun to go... It becomes more of Doc's story, and it's not Marty's story, it's Doc's story.
Yeah, and that's cool because... There's in part two, they set up that whole thing with Needles and his job. It's all so weird, and you don't really understand what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
So you kind of get that at the end. And I don't know why Flea is in the movie from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah. I just remember that after you see two in the theater, and I remember there was a preview for three.
Yeah, it said
and it had
included.
The new score that dun 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 dun, and it was like, whoa,
that's
we got to see it. It wasn't just to be continued; it was to be concluded. And you see the Old West, and it was just like awesome.
Because honestly, Back to the Future 2 kind of ends on a bummer, where Doc disappears, and you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah,
and
with Joe Flattery.
Yeah, when he shows up and says, we've had this for 70 years or something in our possession.
We all had bets to see if you would actually be here.
That is all cool. One thing I love about the third one is how in the Old West, Doc Brown sealed up the DeLorean in a cave for Marty to later unearth in the 50s. They have to go and dig it out. I thought that was a cool idea.
I did too. I really, it was almost a John Carter-esque, the cave and all that stuff.
Right.
And I liked where they went with it. I actually really do like the third one.
I think
even though I'm not a huge fan of the whole Clara Clayton thing, I love that Doc gets a film. Like it's his film,
and he gets somebody to be with. And the whole part two, I think, is just so ambitious.
Yeah, it's too ambitious.
It may be too ambitious. The effects don't hold up, really. They don't. There's parts with the DeLorean flying around that looks so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgive it in a lot of ways. But
they're trying to really kind of... It's the what happens with time travel storyline.
Right.
Like, that this shit should not be played with. He should have never created this thing in the first place.
It seems like way too early in the movie does Doc think that, too. He goes, I'm going to destroy the machine. You're like, where the hell did this come from? Like, he does it way too fast. Like, I can understand after Biff pulls the things, but also, like, I have trouble with how would old geriatric Biff know how to time travel in the DeLorean.
How would he know, like, the time circuits have to be turned on?
He figures all that shit out. He gets back and drops it off the same spot where they left it. Like, how would he even do this shit?
Yeah, and then you're getting into, like, the deleted scene stuff where after he does that, he fades from existence.
Yeah.
And all that. I mean, there's so much to talk. We probably end up talking about Back to the Future Part 2 for 3 hours.
Yeah.
There's so many little things.
There's a lot of neat things about it, but also at the same time, there's things that bother me about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of them is that I think the makeup is terrible. The old makeup, it looks awful. Another thing is old Michael J. Fox, when he's an older guy in his 40s, why does he talk like this? I'm in my 40s.
It was the car accident.
Yeah. I'm in my 40s. I don't talk like that.
I'm in my 30s, and I still sound like I'm 16.
I do think that the daughter, Michael J. Fox, is funny. He's like, Mom?
I think that was fun. Also, do you remember how at least when I was a kid, whenever that came out, it was like, so that's the future of pizza, a rehydrator.
Yeah. I was like, sweet.
We'll get into that whenever we do the movie mini for Back to the Future 2.
The whole bit with him losing his job is just confusing, I think. It's
You're
a mess.
Fired!
Yeah, what the hell is going on in all that scene?
Yeah, it's some sort of, like, credit scam or... I don't know.
Okay, also this. This is one thing before we go. I just have to say this. The whole chicken thing. Like, what are you, chicken? Where did that come from?
That is some, like, retroactive or what do they call that? If it was that big of a deal, it would have been in the first one.
Yeah,
like, just kind of came out of nowhere.
You remember in Rebel Without a Cause, James Dean, if anyone calls him chicken?
Yeah.
But
yeah. It was like one of those references that just didn't fit. It didn't feel right.
Right. Marty in the first movie wouldn't act like that.
No. He wasn't reactionary like that because he was actually more proactive.
Yeah, so it's kind of like they needed to do that for it to work in the movie. That stuff like that bothers me. But
the characters changed.
Let's just say, guys, that was our Back to the Future movie mini, and we could talk more about the Back to the Future trilogy if you want, but I hope you enjoyed this, because, you know, I love the movie, and I love talking about
it. Yeah, it's one of my all-time favorites. It's one of my go-to films of my youth.
It's a lot of fun, and recently came out on Blu-ray. How does that look, Bill? Because I don't have
it. It's stunning. It's you know what's great about it is they didn't touch it up too much. There's still this like heavy element of film grain to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a sharp film look to it. It looks really good. It's not overly like digital noise reduction or edge enhancement. It just looks good.
Let me ask you. I've never seen the Eric Stoltz footage, or is there much of that on there?
I never watched it. I can honestly tell you that I never watched the Eric Stoltz footage.
Oh, okay.
I think there's like 40 minutes of it, but it's not like you can just watch it. I think it's part of a documentary.
Yeah, like they talk over it, which is kind of lame, but I wonder how Eric Stoltz...
So you do not have it on Blu-ray yet?
No.
Okay, Christmas. You'll have it.
That would be a cool Christmas
mail.
Present. See, that's a trilogy I'd want more than the Star Wars everything redone kind of thing.
Oh my god, yeah. Hopefully, well, then you've actually dropped hints to your wife about it, though, so she probably will get it for you. So
maybe. Sometimes she doesn't pick up on my hints at all.
Well, that happens.
Well, Bill, thank you for joining me for this NIMH Movie Mini of Back to the Future.
And thank you for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for supporting Nowhere in Mulberry. And I hope you enjoyed this. And I hope you enjoy the rest of our holiday pack.
And they have, you know, we do have to say, you have no idea how much it means to us, your support. Honestly, we're not, this isn't PBS. You know, a lot of times we really do depend on fan support. And the monetary thing really does help a lot, too. So just thank you.
And we,
thank you.
And we like to give you your money's worth. So we take a lot of pride in these things, and we hope you enjoy them.
Yeah, and we try to do things that we think our fans will also enjoy, because, you know, that's why you listen to the show, is that, you know, you want to share in this with us, and we like to share our favorite things with you. So, thank
totally.
You.
And also things that bother us. So, hopefully we don't get too... we weren't critical of this movie
at all.
No,
not at all.
I'm more critical of the second one, but I don't want to seem like a fuddy
story.
Yeah. Well, Bill, we're still in 1985, so you know where we've got to go, right?
Back to the future?
You're right! Back to the future!
So why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
Now this is podcasting!